detention center by a detainee pretending to prepare to hang himself, said Navy Rear Admiral Harry B. Harris. The insurrection comes as a key UN panel on Friday joined European and United Nations leaders in urging the Bush administration to close its prison in Guantanamo Bay, saying the indefinite detention of terror suspects there violates the world's ban on torture. George Bush had a candid moment yesterday with NBC's David Gregory. When asked about his low approval ratings, Bush laughed.
Let me ask you about your leadership. In the most recent survey, your disapproval rating is now 1 point lower than Richard Nixon's before he resigned the presidency. You're laughing, but why do you think that is?
Because we're at war, and war unsettles people.
Gregory pressed him later in the interview after Bush blamed the media for his bad polls. Bush called people that disapprove of him unsettled about his leadership. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid called a proposal to make English the official language racist on the Senate floor yesterday. Reid, the Democrat from Nevada, said, quote, "This amendment is racist. I think it's directed basically to people who speak English," end quote. Moments later, the Senate approved the measure on a 63-34 vote. Virtually all the Republicans were joined by 11 Democrats to approve the largely symbolic amendment. Immediately following that vote, the Senate approved a second amendment declaring on a 58-39 vote that English is the, quote, "common and unifying language," end quote. The first stories of death came quickly and immediately. New Orleans area residents drowning in fetid floodwaters, succumbing in sweltering attics, or being swept out to sea. But state officials say that for weeks after it made landfall on August 29th, Hurricane Katrina kept claiming Louisiana victims, often in more subtle fashion and often in other states. Elderly and ill evacuees too fragile for grueling trips on gridlocked highways, infants stillborn to mothers who were shuttled to other cities when they should have been on bed rest, and residents overcome with anxiety by 24-hour television broadcasts of the devastation back home. Because of a continuing rise in reports of out-of-state deaths, Louisiana's official Katrina toll jumped 22% on Thursday to 1,577 deaths when the Department of Health and Hospitals added 281 more victims to the count. Texas alone accounted for 223 deaths of the increase. And the work is far from finished. Only 32 states, representing 480 deaths, have filed their reports with Louisiana officials. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Hey, this is Michelle Branch, and I'm part of a program called Empower. Mental health problems are real, common, and treatable. To learn more, visit empoweryouth.org. That's the letter M, poweryouth.org.
2 women in their 70s were arrested Thursday after they allegedly befriended 2 homeless men, took out 19 life insurance policies on them, and filed claims worth more than $2.2 million after the transients mysteriously died in hit-and-run pedestrian accidents in Los Angeles. One of the men was hit by a car and killed in an alley off La Brea and Melrose Avenues in 1999, and the second victim was run down in a Westwood alley last June. Detectives said they connected the two cases several months ago during a chance meeting between two investigators in the LAPD's West Traffic Bureau squad room. A detective handling the death of Kenneth McDavid, 50, was talking about the peculiarity of the case when another detective interrupted him to say that he had worked on a similar-sounding, unsolved hit-and-run 6 years ago. Comparing notes, they realized that in both cases the bodies had been claimed by Olga Ruderschmidt, 73, of Hollywood, and Helen Golay, 75, of Santa Monica. Attorneys for Kenneth Lay suggested bank loan documents containing terms he allegedly violated actually were signed by an automatic signature device in the Enron Corporation's founder's office and not by him. Lay went on trial Thursday on 1 count of bank fraud and 3 counts of making false statements regarding personal banking issues. The trial, expected to wrap up as early as Tuesday, got underway the day after jurors began deliberating the nearly 4-month-long fraud and conspiracy case of Lay and former Enron chief executive Jeffrey Skilling. Lay is charged with 6 counts in that case, Skilling with 28. Prosecutors allege that beginning in 1999, Lay obtained $75 million in loans from three banks, Bank of America, Chase Bank of Texas, and Compass Bank, and then reneged on an agreement with the lenders that he wouldn't use the money to carry or buy stock. Under federal rules adopted after the 1929 stock market crash, only 50% of a loan can be used to buy margin stock, generally defined as a stock listed on a national securities exchange and most mutual funds. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. So it's Friday, and I think we're going to do a little mopping up tonight, this afternoon, this evening. Tonight? Nah, that ain't night out there. I'm a slave of the clock. Now, we'll do some mopping up. We'll catch up on some stuff that has been left by the wayside through the remainder of the week. It's a good thing for Friday, isn't it? I could say it's open phones Friday, but Jiminy, it's always open phones around here. You know, we don't do the censoring gig. You're always welcome at Head On. You've got as much to do with the content of this program as I or anyone else does because, you know, since I'm a progressive, I'm a liberal, I'm a Democrat, I don't have some egomaniacal notion, you know, with the great big giant swelled South Park kind of head that I'm somehow more important than anyone else participating in this program. This is Conversation Radio, and you are welcome. Join in. But we got a couple of starting points. Today in the House of Representatives, the conservatives, you know, the ones that, you know, the gang that just got done passing a whole bunch of new tax cuts for the wealthiest 1% of America, you know, those conservatives. They slashed $500 million today. $500 million, a half a billion dollars, you know, from a veteran spending bill. Half a billion dollars for veterans got cut out. You know, things for, well, I mean, veterans doesn't mean out of the military. Housing for current serving troops was hacked out of this spending bill. And it was just embarrassing. It was sickening. As was noted by Representative Chet Edwards, a Texas Democrat, bill falls $1.5 billion short of what was needed. He said this sends a terrible message to our troops here at home in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, of course, you know, this is the support the troops gang. Congressman sleazebag Jeb Hensarling, Republican, Repiglican of Texas, played footsie with parliamentary procedure and deleted 20 projects from the bill worth $507 million. He was joined by people like the appropriately named Jeff Flake of Arizona. And Mike Pence, Indiana. Pathetic. It's just sickening. They can make, what can they do? They can make room for their own little sweetheart projects. They can, I don't need to catalog. They're Republicans. They do all kinds of nasty things. They hold sham hearings for nasty little spies who look like Mr. Wilson from Dennis the Menace. And bear also a surprising resemblance to Heinrich Himmler. Let's see, he called him a Nazi. We're 4 minutes into the program, and I'm already calling Republicans Nazi. Oh, this may be an interesting Friday. But that's what they do. So it comes as no surprise. You will enjoy that. State of Pennsylvania just got done with its primary. And it turns out that the new touchscreen machines allow you to spell out your write-in vote by pressing alphabet letters on the screen. And apparently, a lot of people, rather than voting for, say, Rick, go play with the dead fetus Santorum, voted for, let's see, how can I describe this? It begins with a C, it ends with an R, and it's rather a long, dirty word, and it, Rooster Vacuumer? How's that? Does that give you an idea? And Luzerne County Election Bureau Director Leonard Piazza said he was really just horrified. He said, quote, "That's disgusting. If that's the kind of word you're going to type into these machines, then you ought not to be bothering to vote, because that's an insult to the voting process." You see, Mr. Piazza, Leonard Piazza, doesn't understand that his ugly little damn cheating machines are what's an insult to the voting process. And what's more, he was especially disgusted because he said, "What's unfortunate is we still have to report those words as write-in votes." I'd kind of like to be there at the counting office, Secretary of State's office, whatever, in Harrisburg. Let's see, that's 92,000 for Santorum. And we got 14 Mickey Mouses and, then there's that word, and somebody has to scream. Now, see, this is the Internet. Why can't I say what the word is? I'm not constrained by the FCC. I'm constrained by dignity and a sense of my own personal decency. For all I know, my darling children are standing in the studio behind their beautiful mother, listening to this broadcast while I'm talking. Otherwise, I would tell you what the word is, but you can figure it out. Let's see. 10-letter word. 10-letter word. Point to the ear. Sounds like rock. Exactly. Sounds like rock. Second syllable. Walks like one, talks like duck. Sounds like duck. Rock, duck. And Abraham came from. That's right. Rock, duck. That's who got lots of votes in Pennsylvania when people had to go and vote on the hateful little Republican-controlled Diebold touchscreen machines. Rock, duck. Oh, brother. And then Piazza made it even funnier. He said, "It's not a joke. These machines are not a toy." Oh, no. No, Mr. Piazza, they're not a toy. No, they're also not vote-counting machines. They're vote-regulating machines. It's already been said, these machines in use in Pennsylvania, it was said last week, that they are one of the great, most grave national security threats in the country. I think my own beloved state of West Virginia had an experience with e-voting. And the balloting was barely over before our own little Republican Secretary of State had filed suit against Diebold and ES&S and Sequoia and all of it's not a joke. These machines are not a toy. No, but the thing is, backing up for just a minute, when you've got members of Congress slashing $500 million off a bill for veterans, don't be surprised if they don't go to your little touchscreen machine and type out R-O-C-K-D-U-C-K-E-R. Rock ducker. Only not with the R and not with the D. Because you know what? I tend to agree with those Pennsylvania voters. Only I'd use a different word. Sons of witches! Eh, see, you thought I was gonna, didn't you? Okay, we got a break coming. Let's take it. The phone number, you know the phone number, 877, the number 4 head on, 877-443-2366. Rock Ducka. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, I took a walk around the world to ease my troubled mind.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Now it comes out. The biggest beneficiaries of Bush's immigration speech the other night are the friendly folks at Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, or Northrop Grumman. They're submitting bids for a multi-billion-dollar federal contract to build Bush's so-called virtual fence along the border. This, according to the New York Times. Bad enough that Bush is going to militarize the border. Now he's privatizing the militarization of the border. The administration is asking the contractors to devise and build a whole new border strategy, the Times reports. Listen to Michael Jackson, Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security, as he sought out bids on this work. This is an unusual invitation, he said. We're asking you to come back and tell us how to do our business. The private companies will decide what equipment these Border Patrol agents will use, how and when they're dispatched to spots along the border, where the agents assemble the captured immigrants, and how they process them, the New York Times article said. These are basic law enforcement jobs. They belong to government. But under Bush, they're all for sale to his buddies in the corporate suites. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
All right, then. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. About 21 minutes after the hour. What do you think? Would you, I mean, if you go and you have to vote on one of these cussed little machines, and you have no guarantee that anybody's going to count your vote, then why not vote for Rock Ducker or Runt or Flick Deed? Why not?
Bob will be back in just a moment. We're going to go ahead and go to the phones. We've got Andy. Andy?
It's all good fun, isn't it, with the modern technology, eh?
It's wonderful. How are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
How's things on the other side of the pond?
Well, wet, but interesting. our immigration debate's hotting up. Because we've just found out that the Home Office, kind of the State Department, well, not the State Department, I don't think you have a Home Office. I think lots of different departments of yours would be our Home Office. the police raised the Home Office main building and arrested 5 illegal immigrant cleaners.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, it's basically the same as finding a bunch of Mexican illegal immigrant cleaners in the Capitol building.
And I'm sure everyone's really tickled about that, aren't they?
Oh, everyone who's not Labour is laughing there. You know, we're just having a great time. Anyone who's not a Labour supporter, anyone who's a Labour supporter is yet another reason to slap your forehead and go, why?
Well, you know, that's it's a really a hotbed issue here.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is here, too. And obviously, none of us are being told the real reason, which is that they want illegal immigration so that they can drive down our wages. It's purely what it's all about. They, you know, if they didn't want illegal immigration, how hard would it be not to have it? Not very hard at all.
No.
You know, all you do is you say anyone who hires an illegal immigrant goes to prison for 25 years and all of their assets are seized by the state. And that means any corporation that hires illegal immigrants, the top, the people in the board go to prison for 25 years and all the corporate assets are seized by the state. And then within a month or two, you'd have no illegals being able to find work anywhere.
Right. Well, one of the things here, I mean, they keep talking about illegal immigration.
Mm.
But where you find most people that don't have citizenship and things like that, it's the people who's complaining most about it that's hired them.
Yeah. Yeah, generally. I mean, you know, the displacement argument of the Republicans is the typical thing. It's always like, what are we doing? Okay, let's blame the other people for that, you know. And so that's sort of an aspect of that, really, isn't it?
Right. Well, it's easy to play the blame game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thou dost protest too much sort of situation, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, and, you know, it's... They say that the jobs are becoming harder and harder to find, and Americans don't want to do them. I don't really think that's the case.
No, it's absolutely not the case. The case is that Americans can't afford to do them.
Exactly.
It's that simple. You know, I mean, look, economics 101 for everybody here, okay? Everything anybody who's done economics in university in the last, I'll be generous, 15 years is rubbish, and they know nothing about economics. What they know about is, what's that horrible old guy's name? Who's in charge of the Federal Reserve.
Oh, Greenspan?
Greenspanomics, that's the one. We'll call it Reaganomics, but that's not really fair. Reagan was a fool. He did what Greenspan told him.
Precisely.
Greenspanomics works on the principle that if you break a window, then that's good. Even though the window's been broken and it's cost you money, because you've created a job, somebody has to come and fix the window. Now, that's a great argument as long as you stop there and don't follow it to the logical conclusion. I mean, the logical conclusion is what's happening in Iraq. We sell you stuff, you blow it up, then you pay us to fix what you've blown up. We sell you more stuff that blows stuff up, and then you pay us to fix what's been blown up.
Exactly.
It's a reduction of wealth cycle. It's not an increase, it's not a production of wealth, it's a reduction of wealth. If you want to produce wealth, here's how you do it. You make the minimum wage in America and Europe, the equivalent of let's call it $25 an hour.
Right.
Okay.
Fair union.
That's basically doubling the minimum wage for everyone, yeah? And probably doing quite a lot more than that for America. If you did that, then suddenly all these so-called poor and middle-class people suddenly have, you know, anywhere between sort of $10,000 and $20,000, $30,000 more in their accounts each year. Now, are they going to invest that in corporations, or are they going to spend that in the economy?
They're going to spend it in the economy.
And so what happens? The money filters through, and it goes to the people who are selling things, and then they can pay their wage, the laborers, their wages, their higher wages, which means they can buy more things, which means they can then pay their wage, their laborers more wages, which means they can buy more things, and you produce wealth. Everyone gets richer. The people at the top get a lot richer. The people at the bottom get better off.
Right. Well, the economy flourishes, but they don't have that mindset.
No. They totally do not understand economics. I mean, basically, there's a game called Patrician 3, okay? And it's just a PC game, and basically you have a ship and you trade, okay? You know, you buy goods here, you sell them there.
Right.
The idea is to get recognized and people think you're good because you're bringing in the goods they need. That same principle should be applied to governance.
Well, you know? they haven't gotten that bright yet.
Well, it's not a question of getting that bright. They literally do not want anybody else to be in a position of any kind of power. See, what they see is a great mass of people called, well, they probably refer to it as all sorts of derogatory terms, but we'll call it the mob. And they see the mob, and they think if the mob has too much money, then the mob might take some of their power. Obviously, they don't understand that their power is non-existent. I mean, the power is there as long as there's food on the table. As soon as food disappears, then being rich
is
nothing. And, you know, I mean, the rich consistently fail to learn the lessons of history. The people who learn the lessons of history are the poor and the middle class. We don't repeat things. It's the rich who consistently repeat the mistakes of the past.
That's true. Well, I mean, it's become a class war.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's always been a class war.
It's even gotten worse over the years. See, the NSA is after us again.
Oh, sorry.
And they hate us. They're not happy.
No. Agent Fred, look, I know I'm telling the truth, but fact is, without me committing a crime against the United States, you're not allowed to extradite me. Oh, and by the way, just in case Agent Fred thinks they might be able to get out and rustle something up, I'm a fully signed up person on the Official Secrets Act, and I have connections with the government, so
yeah,
keep me the hell alone.
You're illegal, aren't you?
Huh? Oh,
you're legal.
I've worked for the Queen. Not directly, you understand, but in her Foreign and Commonwealth Office.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, this whole situation of America's imperialism, I mean, you know, the American people have got to be the most uninformed people in the world because they don't realize they've got an empire.
Well, I think that they know they do.
I think they've realized now.
And I think that it's trying to be taken from them.
Well, it will be. I mean, you know, empires can potentially last forever, but they generally don't because they're always run ineptly. And the American Empire is possibly the most ineptly run empire of all so far. I mean, the Roman Empire lasted, well, the best part of 1,000 years.
But the people finally got tired.
And, well, yeah, the people got tired and the barbarians came a-knocking and some fool let them across the border. You know, I mean, like, The American situation is somewhat similar, but it's all happened in a much more compressed timescale, much more like 100 years or so.
Right.
If that, really. I mean, arguably, America didn't really have an empire until after the Second World War, really, when you stole half of ours and then charged us for it.
And then charged you for it.
Hey, pick it. I've always wanted to work that one out.
Sorry about that, man.
Sorry?
Sorry about that.
Oh, well, that's not your fault. That's just the corporatists doing their thing. Do you know what I mean? I mean, we would have done it to you if it had been the other way around. No hard feelings. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Well, you know, it just waiting your turn.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, we had our empire and we got very rich. And you know, one of the byproducts of that now is that anywhere we go in the world, we're either loved or hated, depending on how well the empire did and what sort of terms we left in.
Well, hopefully you're loved. But Andy, hold on. Hold on for a second. We're going to go to break. Okay?
Oh, okay, no worries.
This is the Friday Labor Report, brought to you by the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch. The industrial workers of the world have embarked on a multi-city international campaign to bring democracy into the workplace of Starbucks baristas. Cities where IWW members have been visiting other Starbucks employees are Boston, Portland, Atlanta, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Salt Lake City, and Edinburgh, Scotland, among others. No progress has been made in 3 days of collective bargaining between the University of California and the California Nurses Association. UC signed a 2-year contract in December that expires June 30, 2007, but it includes a spring reopener over the extension of retiree health benefits, health insurance in 2007, second-year salary increases, and penalties on missed meals and rest breaks. In an ad campaign that has run on Fox News Channel, the Center for Union Facts, a Washington-based group partly backed by corporate interests, ran what may be the first TV commercial designed to disparage the labor movement as a whole. The commercial followed the group's purchase of similar anti-union newspaper ads earlier this year. In a 30-second spot that has aired on Fox News nationally and in several broadcast markets, four actors posing as workers describe sarcastically what they love about unions: paying dues, having their dues go to support politicians they don't like, union discrimination against minorities, and the fat cat lifestyles of union leaders. Northwest Airlines Corporation and its baggage handlers and ramp workers reached a tentative agreement early Friday aimed at slashing the bankrupt airline's labor expenses, union and airline officials said. Terms of the tentative agreement and the schedule for a ratification vote were being prepared for distribution to members of the union, representing about 5,600 ground workers. Negotiators for Alcoa Incorporated and the United Steelworkers Union met separately on Thursday as they prepared to begin what are expected to be contentious contract talks. The first joint meeting yesterday was brief, the company and the union said, with the two sides presenting only opening statements. Alcoa spokesman Kevin Lowry predicted the negotiations will be lengthy. The Democratic candidates for governor are jockeying for a prized endorsement Sunday from the Florida AFL-CIO, whose half-million members crave a more union-friendly successor to Republican Governor Jeb Bush. State Senator Rod Smith picked up momentum this week with nods from AFL-CIO councils based in Orlando and his hometown of Alachua. The former labor lawyer got the organization's Legislator of the Year Award for 2005, and this year won kudos for fighting alongside teachers' unions to hold the line on class size limits. For the Friday Labor Report on the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch. This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. They're pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war. Bottom line. Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
All right, you're back on Head On with Bob Kincaid. This is Bruce Birch, and I am now going to be sitting in for Bob for the rest of the program. Bob's computer there just couldn't quite make it to the end of the week. We're so sorry about that, but I understand it's going in for brain surgery in about the next hour or so. So everyone, please do hold their breath and cross their fingers and toes and wish Bob's laptop all the best in its upcoming surgery that will happen in a little while. The brain is going to get removed and a new brain stuck in it. So thank goodness for that. I was listening to the program and Bob was doing some stuff about the veterans, and we'll get to a little bit more of that later on. But just so you know, my name is Bruce Birch. I normally do a radio program called All Things Reconsidered that's on Sunday nights 10 to midnight, and then I also do another radio program with John Fox, and that's called Fourth Estate Radio, and you can go to fourthestateradio.com to check out that radio program or allthingsreconsidered.org. I also do the news. So you get to hear a little bit of Mr. Bruce doing some commentary in the middle of the day, which is kind of an interesting thing. Maybe we'll do some more of this. Who knows? I do understand that we have a couple of people on the telephone, and Andy is on line one. Andy, how are you doing? Now you get to talk to the third person of the day.
Hey, man. How's it going? Yeah,
I'm going great, man. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. A bit of a cold, but, you know, that's typical this time of year in Wales. It's wet and miserable.
What's the temperature over there right now? Or, I guess that would be Celsius, right?
Yeah, during the day, it's I think it hit about 16, 17. So that'd be about, I don't know, what, low 60s?
Probably 40s to 50s.
Oh, right, yeah, even lower. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in the next few days, like, I don't know, give it 2 weeks, maybe. We should be back up to sort of 24, 25, up into the 70s.
Right.
But yeah.
I heard you guys talking about the whole immigration thing, and I got to tell you, I you know, based on everything that I've seen over this week, it has been a struggle to not see Rovian handprints all over this, you know?
Oh, for sure, man. Your immigration debate is one of the biggest non-debates I've ever seen, you know what I mean?
the biggest non-debate, yes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like I was saying to Agnes, if the government was really serious about not having illegal immigration and having managed legal migration, then it would be 25 years in prison for anyone involved in the hiring of illegal immigrants, and the and any assets that person owned or the corporation they worked for owned would be seized by the state. And overnight, you'd have no illegal immigrants working in whichever country that was instituted in. It'd just be that simple. You know?
I totally agree.
And it's not even...
And I think...
Carry on.
Go ahead.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it's not even... If you had to lock them all up, all the people in charge of these companies, it's only about 2,000, 3,000 people anyway, so it's not like this is going to be a problem fitting them into prison. Whereas if you try and lock up all the illegal immigrants, which is what they're suggesting, I don't know, what was it, 12 million in the U.S.?
12 to 14. I think that number could even be higher. It's really sort of hard to tell.
Yeah, every time I hear it, it goes up. I mean, over here, you know, obviously we've got a much smaller population, but we've got the government's official estimate that they don't officially estimate, because they've said you can't officially estimate illegal immigration, which is not
right.
You get an official to make an estimate, and that is an official estimate. Do you know what I mean? But there you go. But they've said that some of the people who'd like know what they're talking about over here think there might be as many as a million illegals here.
Really?
Yeah, and that's a 60th of the population, effectively, there, do you know what I mean? Which is a fairly significant number. How big is America? 240 million? 250 million?
300.
300 million. Oh, well, there you go. 30 million's nothing.
10 million, hey, what the heck? That's only, what, 1/30th of the population, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, and, bottom line is that... you're absolutely right. You know, the non-issue here is that the folks who hold the purse strings want this to be there. They want to have cheap labor, and it's always been that way. I mean, I did a significant amount of research into some of this, and realized as I was looking back into history that the recent immigrants to this country, and probably to any industrialized nation, always seem to be the ones who do, you know, the entry level work. They're the backbone. Invariably.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've got cleaners over here that work sort of, you know, 20-hour days, immigrant cleaners that work 20-hour days for a pittance. I mean, you know, and then they send a load of that home. And, you know, I mean, aside from just the sheer wrongness of effective slave labor, even the status of being a slave, you know, I mean, the slaves had a horrible time or were treated really badly. And maybe some of them weren't, but generally it was a horrible thing to be a slave. But you knew where you stood. which was generally kneeling in the dirt with somebody's foot on your neck, but you knew where you were. Whereas these illegal immigrants have none of that. They have no even right to life. Illegal immigrants are murdered, you know, here and in America every day, and nothing gets done about it because the police don't know who they are, they don't care, they haven't got the resources. There's nobody to chase it up. There's no white middle-class families shouting at the cameras going, "Oi, what happened to our daughter? What happened to our son?" You know, it's like an undercast. And I won't say an underclass, because they're not a class. They don't have the standings of a class. They're an undercast. And it's pitiful, and it's mean, and it's vicious, and it's all about reducing the wages of me, you, and everyone else. It's all about damaging white people. It's not so much, they don't care what color these people are. They just want our wages down to the same level, and then it doesn't matter.
Well, I totally agree, and I think that, you know what, so you know, the thing that I find to be so interesting about this is that the working people the working American citizens have gotten very riled up about this and are blaming the immigrants, when in actuality they need to turn their angst toward the CEOs, their bosses. I mean, you know, the bottom line is that this issue is nothing more than the very basic anti-union kind of issue, where bring in cheap labor, that'll bust up any kind of organized labor. And what we're seeing in the United States right now is that the middle class is very, very, and it was slowly, probably 4 or 5 years ago, slowly going away. Now it's more rapidly going away.
Yeah.
Concentration of wealth is into the hands of the top 5%, and the rest of us have to fight for the bones left on the floor.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, over here a study was done, and inequality in Britain is now higher than it has been since 1860 something.
Wow.
And that's because of all the various factors. I mean, you know, real inequality in terms of what the average poor person, well, yeah, they've got a TV, and yeah, they've got maybe a minimum wage or benefits, and those things weren't available back then. But the degree to which the rich are richer than the poor is just so vast now. I mean, it's unreal, you know. The sorts of money that can be dropped down the drain by heiresses like Miss Hilton and all of that lot. You know, I mean, she can spend more on a bag than I would be able to afford to spend on a car if I was going to buy a car. And that sort of just total inequality is part of the problem, because it distorts their mind. They like to say that we're a crazy mob. They like to say that, you know, they're the mad rabble or whatever. But the only insane ones are the people who are afflicted by the curse of money, the curse of greed.
Yes.
And they truly are insane. I mean, you know, that you see the ways that that the rich act when they are that rich. Do you know what I mean? And it's with total disregard and a total lack of care. I mean, I guess it comes down to the basic idea that the ones who rule the elite, I mean, let's be honest, most of the elite are a bunch of Muppets as well, and they just benefit from being rich. They're just there. The ones who rule it really would quite like to have a population of around 300 million tops on the world. And they'd like to kill everyone else. You know, my idea of having a world population of 300 million is set up asteroid settlements so we can move everybody off the planet Earth and let it recover. Their idea of having a population of 300 million is kill everyone except for the 300 million we want. Now, which one's more insane, me or them?
I'd say both ideas.
Well, no, to be honest with you, asteroid settlements are perfectly feasible. We could do it now with the technology. I mean, the Russians were talking about doing it back in the 60s.
Really?
But they had to build nuclear weapons to fend off the threat from America, so they couldn't get on with it.
Wow. Okay, so now I'm learning something totally new that I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's really easy. I mean, you basically get an iron carboniferous asteroid, which there are loads, and there's quite a few quite near us, and you just park it in an orbit around the Earth, just like a satellite would be, but a bit further out, somewhere between the Earth and the Moon. And then you basically core it and put like a tube and a life chamber in there, and then drill the inside out in a series of concentric ring caverns, and then you fill each cavern with an atmosphere, and it acts as airlocks, so you won't sort of lose the whole atmosphere if there's some sort of breach in one of them. And you can put a biosphere on the inside once you've spun it up so that the centrifugal force is the effect of one gravity on the inside. Make sense?
Sure. Wow.
It's that. Well, it's technically kind of difficult, but, you know, it could be done.
And, well, I think...
Carry on.
No, I was going to say, I think that maybe, you know, just that there's so much that needs to be done, and it just is amazing to me that we have the science to be able to do things like that, and yet we can't house people.
Well, I mean, the great thing about this idea is that, I mean, if you imagine a rock that's several miles across and you hollow it out, you've got all that matter and you've got to do something with it. Well, given that you're in space and you've got unlimited solar power, you can process mm-hmm. the matter to varying degrees. You can extract all the pure metals. I mean, like, you know the copper shortage? One asteroid would give us copper for 1,000 years if it's got a high enough copper content. You know?
Mm.
The gold. Okay. Gold. There's asteroids that are virtually lumps of gold floating around out there. You know? Anything we need is out in our solar system. And if we just get one asteroid and get on with it, the amount of money that it will create and produce, like I was saying to Agnes earlier, the production of wealth, it will literally turn, it could, if it was done right, turn poverty literally into history in a matter of 5 or 10 years if we got on with it.
Well, I wish we would.
Well, you know, I wish we would too, because if we don't, the Chinese are going to get there first. Have you seen how many rockets they're firing into space at the moment?
I haven't. I need to get more on top of this here. This is bad.
Well, I mean, the Chinese are launching like one or two satellites a month of varying types. Just you know, the same sort of stuff that we've been doing over the last 40 years, but they've got a really, really, really fast expanded space program on the go. They want to get all their results in now.
So we've kind of slowed ours down, and they just speed it up.
Yeah, they're just chucking money into it, and the money they're chucking into it is the money that America is paying for cheap, tacky plastic bits of Chinese rubbish.
Ha, 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 America, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the same way that the money that's being used to buy AK-47s and explosives for the people who don't like American soldiers is coming from American oil petrol tanks. All that money for the Chinese Aegis cruisers, missile systems, and space program is coming from the American pocket too. And of course, you're also getting in debt to the Chinese to buy that stuff in the first place, so you owe them twice. The insanity of the system just never fails to surprise me. And how people on the news, I mean, BBC News, you know, reports the kind of stuff that's just glaringly obvious with a totally deadpan face. And I'm like, how do these guys do it? I mean, I'd be either screaming at the auto cue or laughing. Do you know what I mean? How can you just stand there and sit there and lie to people on camera about the reality of well, immigration, how the deficit of America, how America's borrowing is. I mean, you know, people are going, oh, America borrows money from China, loads of it. And then that's the end of the conversation. It's like, okay.
Well, I think, I totally am with you there. And the only thing that I can say about that is that, you know, power lays down with power, I guess is the best way to put it. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, the Rupert Murdochs and the, you know, all of those folks who are up at the upper echelon of the news business, of, you know, they've turned it from an informational thing into an entertainment, an infotainment.
Yeah, I hate it. I mean, you know, my problem is that we've always had the BBC over here, and they've always been to kind of like ignore ITV, ignore Sky, ignore the American networks. But we do this right, you know, this is how it's done. But now. Sure. Since Blair's been in charge, and he kind of hamstrung the BBC, because they were getting pretty shirty with him about the Iraq war and dodgy dossiers and all this sort of stuff. And I don't know if you remember, there was a guy apparently committed suicide over here. That
I do remember.
Yeah. Well, he apparently slit his wrist and sat under a tree to die, okay? But there was no blood on the ground. There was a few drops.
That sounds like... That sounds exactly like one of the suicides we had here, where a guy shot himself in the back of the head.
Oh, right, yeah. What, with a big gun, not with a handgun of some kind?
Yeah, with a rifle, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'd love to see how he did. What was he, a contortionist?
You know? He was doing yoga at the time, yeah. I think. I'm not sure, but...
Well, you know, the flagrant assassinations and eliminations of people going, you know, Kennedy and onwards, that our government... you know, mine and yours have partaken in, it astonishes me that more people haven't just realized. Do you know what I mean? You know, I mean, there's somebody who's involved in a really high up, who was it? Somebody involved in the Abramoff scandal, some lawyer in LA, She was beaten to death by a guy wearing a hood and carrying a baseball bat outside of her office by her car. I think it was about a year ago, just as it was all starting to come up. And it was obviously an attempt to silence it.
It was only, and of course it was chalked up to being a normal mugging.
Oh,
right?
No, it was just normal mugging. Although her purse, her Rolex, and all of her diamond earrings and necklace and things were still on the body. It happens here. Oh, he was mugged. Oh, I suppose he was mugged by some like black crack addict who needed. It was a black female single mothered crack addict. Just to make sure the Daily Mail's got his headline.
It was a black female welfare mother crack addict.
Absolutely. She mugged them, killed them, and didn't steal anything. That's what happened, obviously. And you know, it goes on. 9/11. You know that video that they released. The still shots that go together as a PowerPoint presentation that they released that shows a missile hitting. You know, I mean, does anybody know anything about aerodynamics? Ever stood next to a bus? Yeah.
Absolutely.
What happens to the fireball coming out of the Pentagon? It just kind of billows out like an explosion normally does and billows straight up. If there'd been a plane hitting it at 400 knots, not that the plane could have possibly done that maneuver, but if it had, then surely all that fire would have been like forced into the building and the stuff that came out would have been squashed up against the walls and forced over the top of the roof, wouldn't it?
I would think so as well, unless there was some sort of explosive right there on the cone of the plane as well.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, the whole situation is so obviously it was, I'm not going to say that they planned it from the outset, but I am going to say that the people who did the flying of planes into the World Trade Center, if there were any, which I'm not convinced of, but if there were some Arabs that did that, then they thought they were doing it for Allah. They didn't realize they were doing it for Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda, yeah, no doubt.
And that's it. You know, the Pentagon gets hit. Well, how convenient. What was in the paperwork in those offices? Maybe the plan for the event?
Well, people on the plane I was reading something the other day, and I could be totally wrong with this. Mm-hmm. Someone who was actually on the plane who hit the Pentagon's passport turned up in New York.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know that 14 of the 19 hijackers were found by the BBC within 3 weeks of the event, don't you?
They were found by the BBC?
Yeah. An Algerian taxi driver, a couple of Saudis, I think it was like four or five or six Saudis, all of them living in Saudi Arabia under their own names with their families. Literally, the BBC just looked these people up in the phone books and went around to their houses and asked.
You know, because after all, if we can't record their telephone calls, if we don't know, if they're not in the phone book, we won't know how to find them. I'm sorry, this past weekend, and I'm going to shift subjects really quick before we get over to the break, but this past weekend, the presidential parody address, there's a guy who does the parody of the presidential radio address here.
Right.
And basically he talked about the NSA wiretapping program and how, he went into if you purchase the NSA program now, you will get free call waiting and, all these other neat little things. But that's beside the point. You know, you're absolutely right. I read that, too, and I, there's so much that there's so many unanswered questions about 9/11. There's so many holes you could drive a truck through.
How the buildings fell, what happened to the gold, why there aren't two huge holes next to the hole in the Pentagon where the two huge Pratt and Whitney titanium turbine engines went bouncing through. Because I've seen plane crashes. I've seen the sights after plane crashes. Not with my own eyes, admittedly, but, a helicopter going over a plane crash. The engines are always about a mile or so further on or buried in a building, whichever comes first. You've got two great big things that weigh like sort of 14, 15 tons each anyway, and they're made of the hardest material we can make. They don't stop for much. But that didn't happen to the Pentagon. There's so many questions, and the questions all point towards a conspiracy. And, a conspiracy, let's face it, a politician and a businessman talking to each other is a conspiracy. So what this is, it's a giant conspiracy of epic proportions, frankly, isn't it? I mean, it makes the Reichstag look amateurish.
Indeed it does. Andy, we're going to have to leave it there. I've got a top of the hour break to take, and wonderful talking with you, though.
No, it's good, man. Have a good night, and hopefully Bob will be back on later. But, yeah, no, have a good one anyway.
Okay, you too, and maybe you'll catch us late at night one night. Of course, that's early your mornings. I don't know.
Oh, well, yeah, it's early my morning now, man. Yeah.
But all right, man.
I'll ring in one Saturday or something.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks a lot, man. Have a great night.
Wicked. Take it. Bye.
Okay. And you're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid, and I'm not Bob, I'm Bruce, but I'm not a Kincaid either. But I am covering for Bob tonight as he goes and has brain surgery with his laptop. So if you'd like to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366, or you can send me an email, bruce@brucebirch.com. Either way, we'll get you in here. We'll be right back after the news. Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Prisoners wielding improvised weapons attacked military guards trying to save a detainee pretending to commit suicide at the U.S. prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, the base commander said Friday. In the ensuing melee, six prisoners were injured. U.S. guards were lured Thursday evening into a dorm-like room at a minimum security wing of the detention center by a detainee pretending to prepare to hang himself, said Navy Rear Admiral Harry B. Harris. The insurrection comes as a key UN panel on Friday joined European and United Nations leaders in urging the Bush administration to close its prison in Guantanamo Bay, saying the indefinite detention of terror suspects there violates the world's ban on torture. George Bush had a candid moment yesterday with NBC's David Gregory. When asked about his low approval ratings, Bush laughed.
Let me ask you about your leadership. In the most recent survey, your disapproval rating is now 1 point lower than Richard Nixon's before he resigned the presidency. You're laughing, but why do you think that is?
Because we're at war, and war unsettles people.
Gregory pressed him later in the interview after Bush blamed the media for his bad polls. Bush called people that disapprove of him unsettled about his leadership. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid called a proposal to make English the official language racist on the Senate floor yesterday. Reid, the Democrat from Nevada, said, quote, "This amendment is racist. I think it's directed basically to people who speak English," end quote. Moments later, the Senate approved the measure on a 63-34 vote. Virtually all the Republicans were joined by 11 Democrats to approve the largely symbolic amendment. Immediately following that vote, the Senate approved a second amendment declaring on a 58-39 vote that English is the, quote, "common and unifying language," end quote. The first stories of death came quickly and immediately. New Orleans area residents drowning in fetid floodwaters, succumbing in sweltering attics, or being swept out to sea. But state officials say that for weeks after it made landfall on August 29th, Hurricane Katrina kept claiming Louisiana victims, often in more subtle fashion and often in other states. Elderly and ill evacuees too fragile for grueling trips on gridlocked highways, infants stillborn to mothers who were shuttled to other cities when they should have been on bed rest, and residents overcome with anxiety by 24-hour television broadcasts of the devastation back home. Because of a continuing rise in reports of out-of-state deaths, Louisiana's official Katrina toll jumped 22% on Thursday to 1,577 deaths when the Department of Health and Hospitals added 281 more victims to the count. Texas alone accounted for 223 deaths of the increase. And the work is far from finished. Only 32 states, representing 480 deaths, have filed their reports with Louisiana officials. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, this is Michelle Branch, and I'm part of a program called Empower. Mental health problems are real, common, and treatable. To learn more, visit empoweryouth.org. That's the letter M, poweryouth.org.
2 women in their 70s were arrested Thursday after they allegedly befriended 2 homeless men, took out 19 life insurance policies on them and filed claims worth more than $2.2 million after the transients mysteriously died in hit-and-run pedestrian accidents in Los Angeles. One of the men was hit by a car and killed in an alley off La Brea and Melrose Avenues in 1999, and the second victim was run down in a Westwood alley last June. Detectives said they connected the two cases several months ago during a chance meeting between two investigators in the LAPD's West Traffic Bureau squad room. A detective handling the death of Kenneth McDavid, 50, was talking about the peculiarity of the case when another detective interrupted him to say that he had worked on a similar sounding, unsolved, hit-and-run 6 years ago. Comparing notes, they realized that in both cases, the bodies had been claimed by Olga Ruderschmidt, 73, of Hollywood, and Helen Golay, 75, of Santa Monica. Attorneys for Kenneth Lay suggested bank loan documents containing terms he allegedly violated actually were signed by an automatic signature device in the Enron Corporation's founder's office, and not by him. Lay went on trial Thursday on one count of bank fraud and three counts of making false statements regarding personal banking issues. The trial, expected to wrap up as early as Tuesday, got underway the day after jurors began deliberating the nearly four-month-long fraud and conspiracy case of Lay and former Enron chief executive Jeffrey Skilling. Lay is charged with six counts in that case, Skilling with 28. Prosecutors allege that beginning in 1999, Lay obtained $75 million in loans from three banks, Bank of America, Chase Bank of Texas, and Compass Bank, and then reneged on an agreement with the lenders that he wouldn't use the money to carry or buy stock. Under federal rules adopted after the 1929 stock market crash, only 50% of a loan can be used to buy margin stock, generally defined as a stock listed on a national securities exchange and most mutual funds. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
All right, you're back on with Head On with Bob Kincaid. I'm not Bob. However, I am Bruce and Bruce Birch, and I'm here with you. So we're not alone. No, we're not. I do understand that we left a caller on hold, and I would love to go ahead and pick him up if we can. My good friend Jim there? Okay. Jim, are you there?
Yeah. Are you there?
Hey. Yes, I am. I'm, yes, sir, I am. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm reasonably well. I hear you 5x5.
5x5 on my end as well, Mr. Jim.
Good.
How's it going?
Reasonably well. I was trying to listen to the last caller, and one thing that it proves to me is even though we're bound by a common heritage, we are separated by common language.
Yes, we are.
I don't know. He was talking about the American Empire. Well, I did think the British Empire, too, and they certainly were the epitome of success as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, they, as far as empire building, could teach everyone a lesson or have taught everyone a lesson, wouldn't you think? Was it the British Empire?
I would tend to say that virtually every empire that has existed has, you know, ultimately ended in, you know, the sins of excess.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say the British Empire would probably be no different from that. But
you know, what's interesting, when Roosevelt and Churchill were trying to cobble together an alliance to fight Hitler, they had significant problems over that very issue. Because Churchill was trying to preserve the empire as best he could, and Roosevelt did not care a whit about it. And he knew that's what Churchill was trying to do. And, you know, even though there's a face upon that holy alliance of Churchill and Roosevelt and ultimately Stalin, Roosevelt definitely had his problems with Churchill over the very question of the British spheres of influence, like India and places like that. And it caused significant problems between them, which didn't surface until recently in historical research. Something to think about. Just very glossy between the big three, between Mr. Churchill, Mr. Stalin, and Mr. Roosevelt, that's for sure.
Well, it was a very tenuous relationship at best. And as a matter of fact, I think even as late as 1943, didn't Churchill meet clandestinely with Adolf Hitler to try to come about an end to the war?
No. They never met. The only thing that ever happened, that nearly happened, was when the Germans were overrunning Russia, Molotov met with a representative of the German government through a Bulgarian representative at a Moscow restaurant.
Huh, okay.
Churchill and Hitler never could quite come to terms, so Hitler sort of respected Churchill. As a matter of fact, Hitler wanted to allow the British Empire to continue in exchange that the Germans would have their own sphere of influence. So in a way, you know, Hitler and perhaps Stalin and Churchill understood one another as far as their own versions of empire a lot better than President Roosevelt did of theirs, if you hear what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I've got an interesting story to tell you. It doesn't relate really, but it's one I thought you might find it interesting. Good story is always good. You know, yeah. Going back to World War II, the Germans started World War II when they attacked claimed that their radio station at Gliwice was attacked by the Polish, okay? Well, that was a setup job engineered by Heydrich, and he had Polish prisoners dressed in or German prisoners dressed in Polish uniforms. And, of course, they were injected and killed, and then they were left there at the station and shot, okay, to make it look like that the Poles had attacked the German radio station. Do you know who provided those uniforms for the German operation?
No, I do not.
Oscar Schindler.
Who?
Oscar Schindler.
Schindler.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Schindler's List. Okay.
He was the same contractor who provided those uniforms for the little incident that started World War II. He was the contractor who provided the Polish uniforms for the prisoners that Heydrich had taken from Dachau. But yet he went on to play his role in history as a philanthropist, businessman, philanderer, or whatever. But yet, you know, through good offices of his own, is now memorialized in the Yad Vashem in Jerusalem. So we have a case of, I call it redemption, don't we?
It sounds like it. And, you know, there's stories like that are similar to that all throughout history. And I think that there is, and I'm going to, there was a, and this was just recently in New Mexico, at the Space Flight Museum, there was, you know what happened right after World War II with Operation Paperclip, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. Where a lot of the Nazi scientists were ushered into the U.S. And, Wernher von Braun, for instance.
Exactly.
Who was the father of the U.S. space flight program.
Right.
And, but there was a certain gentleman who was on the wall there at the Space Flight Museum. Uh-oh.
Hello, hey.
Good evening. and I can't remember his name right now, but I just read this a couple days ago.
Uh-huh.
And apparently somebody going through the museum recognized him as a former Nazi SS guy who did, you know, experimentation in one of the camps on some of the Jews there, and immediately they had a vote and took him down off the wall and removed him from the entire history display.
Yeah, I know. There was, you know, I'll tell you something. Different people play different roles in that regime. I mean, the other night it was mentioned someone called the Pope, the current Pope, a Nazi. And they were talking about the Hitler Youth in face of that danger. someone made the statement that in order to be a member of the Hitler Youth, your parents had to be a member of the Nazi Party. That is not true. A lot of Hitler Youth had parents who did not like the organization, but their children were made to join it, and you had to join it, really. I mean, you had no other choice. And the same thing probably happened to Pope Benedict XVI, and he was not a member of the Alemannia SS or the Waffen SS, but rather just a German Wehrmacht soldier. And I think it's unfair to be calling the Pope a Nazi. I didn't like that at all. It made me very angry.
Really?
Yes, it did. And I might not agree with His Holiness on a number of his stances. But, however, in Germany, you had most people who were, you know, members of the Hitler Youth as they were old enough. I mean, the man who directed my thesis at the University of South Carolina was from Germany, and he was a member of the Hitler Youth. And, of course, for the girls, they had the RDM and the BDM. You know, they had it for the girls, too. And, you know, it was a very pervasive organization headed by von Schirach and later by Arthur Oxman. But, I mean, you know, you can't go back and start throwing rocks at people who were in organizations that were not directly connected with Department 4B4 headed by Adolf Eichmann and his crowd, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I confess that I didn't hear that show the other night where that comment was made, but, you know, and my own knowledge of the history of Pope Benedict is spotty at best, although I had heard that connection at one point.
Well, you know, it's really strange that John Paul II, who was himself a slave laborer for the Nazis, would almost handpick this very gentleman who had such a history, if his history was that tainted. That doesn't make sense to me, does it to you?
No, but, I mean, again, there's a lot of stuff out there that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I'm just saying that I don't think that if Benedict XVI had the same type of connection that Kurt Waldheim did, and we know about him, then perhaps it would have been different. But I'm just saying that, you know, you had Germans who fought during World War II, and they fought for their country, and they were overtaken by events. I mean, if I'd been living at that time in the Dried Age, I would have been a member of Hitler Youth. You probably would have been a member of the Hitler Youth.
It's kind of like the ROTC, huh?
No, it wasn't that. It was there was no questioning about it. I mean, you basically entered when you were a certain age, and then you graduated when you were another age, and then you began to become like a preliminary soldier going out in the field, dealing with field problems and stuff like that. And, you know, it was exercise. And if you've ever seen The Triumph of the Will by Leni Riefenstahl, it'll give you an example of what it was like. You know, they gave these guys plenty of exercise and plain food and, you know, toughened them up. And, you know, there was a certain amount of good to it to a certain extent. The ideology sucked, but as far as, you know, the physical training and stuff, it was a very good idea. And I'll say, well, I can understand how it developed and why it was so successful.
Right.
I'm not defending Nazism. I'm just defending, you know, an organization that was extremely effective in galvanizing the youth of the country. And
that organization, you know, say what you want about, I mean, you know, the reality of the Nazi Party and the whole rise of Adolf Hitler to power was, it was amazing.
You know, Bruce, in 1937, Adolf Hitler was recognized by the Nobel Peace Prize. Do you know who by?
Who's that?
Gertrude Stein.
Wow. Well, and see, there you go. I mean, that just shows you sort of like the double personality this guy had.
Well,
so, but he was. The bottom line is that, you know, everything that he did was, I mean, his motivations were completely evil. Okay, that's my view of that. But I will say that, you know, he was like an evil genius in the same way I think that Karl Rove is an evil genius. They just use their powers for bad rather than good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But
and of course, Hitler did. You know, he was an unusual man who came about with an unusual solution at a time when his country had been dragged through the mud and was in the throes of a horrible depression. And basically, you know, he influenced a lot of people. He was a master orator and a great theoretician in certain respects. But one thing you can't accuse him of doing, he basically said what he was going to do, and he did it. And I believe in listening to people when they tell me what they're going to do. you know, if you read Mein Kampf, I mean, he basically outlined his things for the Jewish people, horrible as they were. And, you know, when evacuation no longer became possible, then, of course, it was deportation, a la, you know, people like Heydrich when they met at Wannsee in 20 January of 1942, you know, to take care of the rest of them. But, I mean, he said he was going to do exactly what he did. And you know, when people speak, the reason I'm mentioning that, Bruce, when people speak, I listen. And it's very important to know what language means. And I try to listen as carefully as I can because I take them literally and for at their word, you know?
All right. Well, Jim, I got to hit a break here, buddy.
Okay.
But I do appreciate you calling in.
Well,
and
I'm afraid I wearied you with this, but that's okay.
No, it's okay.
Sure it is.
All right, man. Well, hope to hear from you over the weekend at some point.
Perhaps. Maybe unless I'm arrested or something, okay?
Uh-oh. Well, that's not. All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Okay. By the way, mining asteroids, I'd like to know what it would take to get somebody up there to mine asteroids and do all that stuff before you got any return on your investment, particularly when we have even begun to explore the natural resources of our own country.
Well, maybe, you know, we're going to get a forum started up at Head On Radio Network pretty soon. And what we'll do is I'll see if I can't get Andy to put some of that information up there for us.
I would like to see in pounds and crowns and guineas exactly what that would cost to make that a practical thing.
I expect that would be quite a bit. But
I would imagine so. Particularly when we've got so much gold and stuff here in the seas and stuff like that. I know what we have with asteroids is called iridium, and I'm not sure what value that is. Well, you have a good evening.
All right, you too, Jim. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye now. And that was our friend Jim from West Virginia. And we're going to go hit a quick break, and we'll be back. But if you want to get in on the radio program, I would strongly suggest that you do so. This is Conversation Radio. It ain't free unless you do it. And that number is 1-877-443-2366. Or you can send me an email, if you'd like, to bruce@brucebirch.com. We'll be right back.
Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. Through 66 and 7 they fought the Congo War with their fingers on their triggers, knee deep in gore. Days and nights they battled the Bantu to their knees. They killed to earn their living and to help out the Congolese. Roland the Thompson Gunner.
Childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just
don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, want your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. It's painful to watch Bush give a speech, and his immigration talk sure was no exception. Hell, it was hard not to break out into guffaws when he said, "We have enough guard forces to win the war on terror, to respond to natural disasters, and to help secure our borders." Well, anyone who's been watching what's going on in Iraq or anyone who saw Katrina knows that the guard is spread woefully thin right now, even before Bush tries to stretch them from San Diego to Brownsville. Oh, but he's not going to militarize the border, he promised. And in this age of NSA data mining and privacy invading, none of us should be keen on the idea of high-tech fences in urban corridors, or for that matter, unmanned aerial vehicles. What's next, a Predator missile? True to his base, Bush conjured up images of immigrants committing crimes and draining our treasury, but he went out of his way not to insult his buddies in the business community who are flouting the law as much as anybody. In his speech, the employers were the victims of sneaky immigrants, not the recruiters and the exploiters of undocumented workers. Here's Bush. Because many illegal immigrants used forged documents to get jobs, that makes it difficult for employers to verify that the workers they hire are legal. This is a charge he made not once, but twice. Bush's speech was a desperate ploy to change the subject, but the subject remains his incompetence and his criminality. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Well, I was born an original sinner. I was
all right, you're back on Head On with Bob Kincaid. Bob's not with us right now, but maybe he'll make a cameo appearance before the end of the show. He had to go have some brain work done on his studio equipment there in Alabama. Before we get off too far, I wanted to run a really quick clip, a really quick quip or quip or something like that. Apparently our good friend Pat Robertson, Osama bin Robertson. Apparently Osama bin Robertson has been talking once more about predictions and prophecy and. And now I think he's making another pitch. He's making another pitch to try to, of course, fill the coffers of the CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network. Agnes, if you have that clip, if you could go ahead and roll the Pat Robertson clip for me.
Scientists warned that a Katrina-sized hurricane would have a devastating impact on South Florida. Hurricane season, of course, begins June 1st. and storm simulations from the National Hurricane Center suggest South Florida's location would make it hard to weather a monstrous storm. That's according to Knight Ridder newspapers. A Katrina-like storm could surge the deep swamps along the coastline through Miami Beach, Fort Lauderdale, and beyond. Scientists also warned such a hurricane would shut off power for months in that region, and the winds could crush roofs, office buildings, and kill residents who refuse to evacuate high-rise condominiums. Hate to hear that. I was born and raised in that area, Pat, and I'm afraid they're right. The population there has grown dramatically in the last decade alone.
It has, and, you know, I go away at the end of each year to pray, and if I heard the Lord write about 2006, as the coasts of America will be lashed by storms, I think we're going to see some really serious storms. And this warning from the Storm Center, one of the experts in Miami, is just one of them. They're talking about storms up the East Coast, and there's a very real possibility of a tsunami or serious flooding and storming in the West Coast as well. So, and I'm sure those in New Orleans are praying that such a thing has happened to them won't happen again. But one more hard hit without those levees being set up, and New Orleans may be part of history.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have felt strongly that the coasts are going to be lashed by vicious hurricanes this year. Also, there may well be something as bad as a tsunami up in the Pacific Northwest. Certainly, the Pacific plates are looks like they're tearing apart. There are all kinds of evidences of earthquakes, volcanoes, etc., going on in the Pacific. Now, if that comes our way, it's going to be devastating. So we're positioning supplies in California. We've got supplies positioned in Florida. We'll have others in the. Of course, we have a major presence in the Gulf right now. We're there because we feel the Lord wants us to help people. We feel it's our duty to help the poor and the needy.
Here comes the pitch.
And so when you contribute $20 a month to the 700 Club, you're saying, I care about people. I care about my neighbors. I care about my friends. I care about those who are suffering. We're sending out, we have 60 or 70 trailers right now, which is a small fleet, but we've got a number, and we're delivering 2 million pounds of food into the inner cities of America every single week. So we're looking after the poor, and some of that fleet can either be expanded or diverted so that when we get into the Gulf area or someplace else that's hurt. We've been in Florida helping those people that last round of hurricanes. We helped those major relief effort in the Gulf. Well, that's what you do when you join the 700 Club, and we're just asking people to help, to say, help us to help those less fortunate.
And that's the way it is on the 700 Club. I'm going to make some predictions now. I'm thinking that there might be some really bad thunderstorms that'll come across Tennessee and North Carolina, and they might even spawn tornadoes, and they might even spawn hailstorms. We might even get two in one day. Okay. All right. We're going to come back and listen to that one slower next time, because there's some things I want you to hear in the background, like the phones ringing as if their people are actually giving them money. The other thing, too, that I wanted to point out about that is that, you know, he says they deliver 2 million pounds of food to the inner cities. I have yet to see a Christian Broadcasting Network truck full of goodies. 60 trailers, they said they've got going around. You'd think I would have seen one at some point. Well, haven't seen one yet, folks. And I live right by two major interstates. Actually, I'm probably closer to Pat Robertson than most of you are in North Carolina. Mr. Robertson. Ah, yes, Mr. Robertson. All right, we're going to get off to a quick break and be back, and then we'll be here for a little bit longer in the next segment. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid. My name is Bruce Birch. I'm covering for Bob while his laptop gets brain salad surgery. And if you want to get on the program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. If you agree, if you disagree, or hell, if you just want to talk about something else, that's great. You can also send me an email, bruce@brucebirch.com. I will be right back. They're tapping the phone. You're never alone.
the skull and the bone. The skull and the bone.
This is the Friday Labor Report, brought to you by the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch. The industrial workers of the world have embarked on a multi-city international campaign to bring democracy into the workplace of Starbucks baristas. Cities where IWW members have been visiting other Starbucks employees are Boston, Portland, Atlanta, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Salt Lake City, and Edinburgh, Scotland, among others. No progress has been made in 3 days of collective bargaining between the University of California and the California Nurses Association. UC signed a 2-year contract in December that expires June 30, 2007, but it includes a spring reopener over the extension of retiree health benefits, health insurance in 2007, second-year salary increases, and penalties on missed meals and rest breaks. In an ad campaign that has run on Fox News Channel, the Center for Union Facts, a Washington-based group partly backed by corporate interests, ran what may be the first TV commercial designed to disparage the labor movement as a whole. The commercial followed the group's purchase of similar anti-union newspaper ads earlier this year. In a 30-second spot that has aired on Fox News nationally and in several broadcast markets, 4 actors posing as workers describe sarcastically what they love about unions: paying dues, having their dues go to support politicians they don't like, union discrimination against minorities, and the fat cat lifestyles of union leaders. Northwest Airlines Corporation and its baggage handlers and ramp workers reached a tentative agreement early Friday aimed at slashing the bankrupt airline's labor expenses, union and airline officials said. Terms of the tentative agreement and the schedule for a ratification vote were being prepared for distribution to members of the union, representing about 5,600 ground workers. Negotiators for Alcoa Incorporated and the United Steelworkers Union met separately on Thursday as they prepared to begin what are expected to be contentious contract talks. The first joint meeting yesterday was brief, the company and the union said, with the two sides presenting only opening statements. Alcoa spokesman Kevin Lowry predicted the negotiations will be lengthy. The Democratic candidates for governor are jockeying for a prized endorsement Sunday from the Florida AFL-CIO, whose 500,000 members crave a more union-friendly successor to Republican Governor Jeb Bush. State Senator Rod Smith picked up momentum this week with nods from AFL-CIO councils based in Orlando and his hometown of Alachua. The former labor lawyer got the organization's Legislator of the Year award for 2005, and this year won kudos for fighting alongside teachers' unions to hold the line on class size limits. For the Friday Labor Report on the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hey, hi, oh, ay, 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 ay
All right, you're back on Head On with Bob Kincaid. This is Bruce Birch, and I am covering for Bob tonight as Bob has his laptop have some brain salad surgery performed on it or whatever. They're tinkering. They're tinkering. They're tinkering. Poor little Acer. All right, we were talking about a number of different things, but the last thing that we went off to the break was we were hearing a clip from Pat Robertson. I said we're going to play it again. I don't know if we're going to do that at this point because I got to tell you, it really bothers me to hear him use the crime of New Orleans and what happened to the Gulf Coast as a way for him to drum up his little money for his little criminal operation out of Hampton, Virginia. And I don't want to give him any more airtime tonight, but I wanted to play that to you guys so that you know that this is a kind of sick bull. Almost did it. This is the kind of sick stuff that this guy pushes on to people who are listening. And you know there is a nation full of little old ladies out there who are watching the 700 Club every day, and he's taking them to the cleaners. And in my mind that is no better than going and sticking a gun in their face and saying, "Give me your money." You know, it really isn't. And I got to tell you, that just bugs the crap out of me. All right. We're going to go on to another topic. And, again, if you'd like to get in on the program, you can do that by calling 1-877-443-2366. Okay. 1-877, the number 4, and then Head On. We'll get you into conversation radio for a free America. We were talking a little bit earlier with Jim, and Jim was talking about the Nazis, and I wanted to talk about fascism a little bit now. Bob turned over his program to me, and he may not get it back the same way. I don't know. But we're going to talk. I want to talk about fascism a little bit because this is the new F word, and it's the one that people are kind of scared to use in some circles because immediately, the images of Hitler, Mussolini, Suharto, all of these guys come up, and these are evil people. George Bush can't be that evil. Well, let's run down the 14 points of fascism, if you will. If you will humor me here for a moment while we do this. And if you are interested in following along, you can Google 14 points of fascism or 14 points of fascism, or you can go to oldamericancentury.org and find them there. In the original article by Lawrence Britt, called Fascism Anyone, he compared the regimes of Hitler, Mussolini, Franco, Suharto, and Pinochet and identified 14 characteristics that were common to each one of those, or to all of them, all of those fascist regimes. And so we're going to run down these 14 points real quick. And let's see if any of this rings a bell, shall we? Number 1, powerful and continuing nationalism. Fascist regimes tend to make constant use of patriotic mottos, slogans, symbols, songs, and other paraphernalia. Flags are seen everywhere as are flag symbols on clothing and in public displays. Anyone remember the Mission Accomplished speech? Where he flew onto the aircraft carrier. Oh, and what about those little yellow ribbons? And we shouldn't forget, bring them on, eh? Okay, number 2, disdain for the recognition of human rights. Because of fear of enemies and the need for security, the people in fascist regimes are persuaded that human rights can be ignored in certain cases because of need. The people tend to look the other way or even approve of torture, summary executions, assassinations, long incarcerations of prisoners and Guantanamo Bay and the prisons in Morocco and Abu Ghraib and rendition and waterboarding. Okay, I don't know if we need to move on. Let's go to number 3. Identification of enemies and scapegoats as a unifying cause. The people are rallied into a unifying patriotic frenzy over the need to eliminate a perceived common threat or foe, racial, ethnic, or religious minorities, liberals, communists, socialists, terrorists, etc. We're going to take the fight to the enemy. Bring them on. Okay, yeah, I'm joking about that, but this is the identification of enemies and scapegoats. This would be, as Michael Savage calls them, the Islamofascists, which is actually a contradiction in terms, but that's what he calls them. Okay, number four, supremacy of the military. Even when there are widespread domestic problems, the military is given a disproportionate amount of government funding and the domestic agenda is neglected. Soldiers and military service are glamorized. That's a pretty obvious one. Number five, rampant sexism. Huh, interesting. The governments of fascist nations tend to be almost exclusively male-dominated. Under fascist regimes, traditional gender roles are made more rigid. Opposition to abortion is high, as is homophobia, anti-gay legislation, and national policy. I guess the Senate voted this week on an amendment to the Constitution to ban gay marriage in the United States, and they voted yes in the committee to do that. So there you go. Number six, controlled mass media. Sometimes the media is directly controlled by the government, but in other cases the media is indirectly controlled by government regulation or sympathetic media spokespeople and executives. Censorship, especially in wartime, is very common. Yesterday the president spoke to, yesterday the president spoke to David Gregory, and in his speech he basically, as you heard in the top of the hour newscast, blamed his low poll ratings on the media. Well, y'all keep putting up them pictures of the dead people in Iraq. As if putting up the pictures of the dead people in Iraq is what, you know, it would have nothing to do with his policy. It has to do with the pictures, right? Okay. And this president has, more so than any other president before him, has, from the very beginning, he restricted access to himself by the press. He restricted his press releases. He restricted his press conferences. He had less press conferences in his first 4 years in office than Bill Clinton did, I think, in the first year. So, anyway. Okay, number seven, halfway through. Obsession with national security. Fear is used as a motivational tool by the government over the masses. Anybody remember the Homeland Security color-coded threat level and how it went up every time that something went bad? Yes, that's right. Keith Olbermann of MSNBC was able to correlate the elevated threats of terror with bad political stuff going on with the Bush regime. So there you go. Obsession with national security is number seven. Number eight, religion and government are intertwined. Governments in fascist nations tend to use the most common religion in the nation as a tool to manipulate public opinion. Religious rhetoric and terminology is common from government leaders, even when the major tenets of the religion are diametrically opposed to the government's policies or actions. President Bush claims to be a devout Methodist, and yet the bishops of the Methodist Church all voted to tell him that war is wrong and that his other policies don't exactly work either. He's the president, so he can do that. He's the decider. Number nine, corporate power is protected. The industrial and business aristocracy of a fascist nation often are the ones who put the government leaders into power, creating a mutually beneficial business-government relationship and power elite. And that cannot be any more evident than the privatization of all of everything, of Medicare, of Social Security, oh my gosh. I mean, it's like rampant across this particular government. This administration. Number 10, labor power is suppressed. Because the organizing power of labor is the only real threat to a fascist government, labor unions are either eliminated entirely or are severely suppressed. In the labor news that I produced today, actually there was a story in there about a national ad campaign where they are targeting blue collar areas with trying to make the unions look bad and trying to point out any of the negative stuff about unions, if there is any, to try to sway the public opinion against unionization. Number 11, disdain for intellectuals and the arts. Fascist nations tend to promote and tolerate open hostility to higher education and academia, It is not uncommon for professors and other academics to be censored or even arrested. Free expression in the arts is openly attacked, and governments often refuse to fund the arts. Well, this particular regime is also doing that as well. And just as a side note, when we go back, we go back to number eight and 11 are intertwined in Georgia right now because they're teaching Bible classes in school. That's right, public school. Number 12, obsession with crime and punishment. Under fascist regimes, the police are given almost limitless power to enforce laws. The people are often willing to overlook police abuses and even forego civil liberties in the name of patriotism. There is often a national police force with virtually unlimited power in fascist nations. Can anyone say Department of Homeland Security? Can anyone say millions of dollars that the Department of Homeland Security has been granting to local police departments to create special intelligence sections within each local police department? This is happening right now. Okay? Happening right now. Number 13, rampant cronyism and corruption. Fascist regimes almost always are governed by groups of friends and associates who appoint each other to government positions and use governmental power and authority to protect their friends from accountability. It is not uncommon in fascist regimes for national resources and even treasures to be appropriated or even outright stolen by government leaders. Oh, my gosh. Doing a heck of a job, Brownie. Doing a heck of a job. Heck of a job, Brownie. Arabian Horse League guy running hurricane relief. If that's not cronyism, I don't know what is. All right, number 14, fraudulent elections. This is the last one, and the 14 points of fascism, fraudulent elections. Sometimes elections in fascist nations are a complete sham. Other times elections are manipulated by smear campaigns against or even assassination of opposition candidates. Use of legislation to control voting numbers or political district boundaries, and manipulation of the media. Fascist nations also typically use their judiciaries to manipulate or control elections. They use their judiciaries to manipulate? How? That could never happen here. Oh, my goodness. Go to John Conyers. Just Google the Conyers Report. Just Google the Conyers Report. That's all I'm going to say. You know, or go to free thefreepress.net. Bob Fitrakis there in Ohio has done a wonderful job of pulling that together in all those areas. You know, those are the 14 points of fascism, folks. There you are. And also, I'm being told now that you can get to those 14 points of fascism by going to the 12th Harmonic blog. Maybe John will put up something there, but it's a 12th. 12thharmonic.net. 12thharmonic.net. So there's your 14 points of fascism. Now, I got those in too quick. I was hoping to stretch it out a little bit. But I wanted to bring that up because we were talking about, you know, how a government can steal power and can create political capital, as Mr. Bush puts it. How a government can create political capital and all the while steal rights away from the people. This particular president who was selected by a 5-4 vote of the Supreme Court, this particular president used the national unity that came about as a result of 9/11, regardless of how that was done, whether it was by Osami or an inside job, as a lot of people believe. Either way, what he did was he used that event to create a police state, wherein his, you know, this is a guy who came into power, who had no political capital at all. I mean, he actually lost the popular vote, and here he comes riding into town as the new Republican president after 8 years of economic harmony and budget surpluses. You know, the people were scared to death, and then this, you know, attack happens. You know, and I don't want to get too much into the 9/11 stuff at this point, but what I do want to say is that according to these 14 points, we are heading down the slippery slope, you know. And if we can agree that all of these 14 points existed in the regimes of Hitler, Mussolini, Franco, Suharto, and Pinochet, and if we can agree that Lawrence Britt did his homework and actually researched this and didn't just write this out of the top of his head, then we can agree that this country is heading down that slippery slope toward fascism. Now, some say we're already there. I am not going to, you know, what I will say is that where we are right now is a very scary place. And the best that I can say about this tonight is that, you know, we have, hopefully we've got the worst behind us, but I don't know that that's true. I mean, when I watched David Gregory's interview yesterday, or this morning, I'm sorry, on over at crooksandliars.com, you can go check that out over there. His interview with George Bush, when he mentioned that George Bush's poll numbers were actually 1 point under where Nixon was when Nixon resigned, the man laughed, and he laughed heartily, and it was not a nervous laugh. It was a laugh, hearty laugh. It was the kind of laugh that you see that someone does, that's like, I don't give a damn. I do not care that my poll numbers are down at 20% or wherever the hell they are at this point. All I care about is that I'm still running the country, and you ain't gonna, you know, it was a more of a screw you kind of laugh. Like, you're not gonna, you can't do anything. You know, so this is the kind of guy who's in charge. I challenge you to go listen, you know, go watch the first 3 seconds of that video, and you will see what I'm talking about. Kind of made me angry to see that. You know, after we've had thousands of people die in New Orleans, after we have had thousands of our brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers die in the sands of Iraq, you know, that he would even dare to say that people are misguided or that people are unsettled with his leadership. No, Mr. Bush, we just don't like you anymore. You've created enough problems. It's time for you to go back to Texas and, as Al Gore said, become the baseball commissioner. Maybe you can do some good there. All right, we're heading, cascading, crashing toward a break. And just so you know, if you want to get on the radio program, we'd love to hear from you. You know, just because Bob's not here doesn't mean you can't call in and talk to me. I'm a nice guy, too. You can do that by dialing 1-877-443-2366. You can also send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com. That's bruce@brucebirch.com. I'll check the email during the break, see if there's anything in there live that needs to come on. You know, in the break, why don't you go out and Google the 14 points of fascism. Go check that out, because that's some pretty important information. I think we all need to be armed with information these days. It's the only way we're going to be able to fight these guys. All right. Let's head on with Bob Kincaid. I'm Bruce Birch, covering for Bob. We'll be right back.
If blood will flow, flesh will steal our war. Drying in the color of the evening sun, tomorrow's rain. She stays away. Something in our minds will always stay. Perhaps this final act was meant to clinch a lifetime's argument. Nothing comes from violence, and nothing ever could. For all I was born beneath an angry star. Lest we forget how fragile we are.
Head on Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. Prisoners wielding improvised weapons attacked military guards trying to save a detainee pretending to commit suicide at the U.S. prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, the base commander said Friday. In the ensuing melee, 6 prisoners were injured. U.S. guards were lured Thursday evening into a dorm-like room at a minimum security wing of the detention center by a detainee pretending to prepare to hang himself, said Navy Rear Admiral Harry B. Harris. The insurrection comes as a key U.N. panel on Friday joined European and United Nations leaders in urging the Bush administration to close its prison in Guantanamo Bay, saying the indefinite detention of terror suspects there violates the world's ban on torture. George Bush had a candid moment yesterday with NBC's David Gregory. When asked about his low approval ratings, Bush laughed.
Let me ask you about your leadership. In the most recent survey, your disapproval rating is now 1 point lower than Richard Nixon's before he resigned the presidency. You're laughing, but why do you think that is?
Because we're at war, and war unsettles people.
Gregory pressed him later in the interview after Bush blamed the media for his bad polls. Bush called people that disapprove of him unsettled about his leadership. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid called a proposal to make English the official language racist on the Senate floor yesterday. Reid, the Democrat from Nevada, said, quote, "This amendment is racist. I think it's directed basically to people who speak English," end quote. Moments later, the Senate approved the measure on a 63-34 vote. Virtually all the Republicans were joined by 11 Democrats to approve the largely symbolic amendment. Immediately following that vote, the Senate approved a second amendment declaring on a 58-39 vote that English is the, quote, "common and unifying language," end quote. The first stories of death came quickly and immediately. New Orleans area residents drowning in fetid floodwaters, succumbing in sweltering attics, or being swept out to sea. But state officials say that for weeks after it made landfall on August 29th, Hurricane Katrina kept claiming Louisiana victims, often in more subtle fashion and often in other states. Elderly and ill evacuees too fragile for grueling trips on gridlocked highways, infants stillborn to mothers who were shuttled to other cities when they should have been on bed rest, and residents overcome with anxiety by 24-hour television broadcasts of the devastation back home. Because of a continuing rise in reports of out-of-state deaths, Louisiana's official Katrina toll jumped 22% on Thursday to 1,577 deaths when the Department of Health and Hospitals added 281 more victims to the count. Texas alone accounted for 223 deaths of the increase. And the work is far from finished. Only 32 states, representing 480 deaths, have filed their reports with Louisiana officials. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Hey, this is Michelle Branch, and I'm part of a program called Empower. Mental health problems are real, common, and treatable. To learn more, visit empoweryouth.org. That's the letter M, poweryouth.org.
2 women in their 70s were arrested Thursday after they allegedly befriended 2 homeless men, took out 19 life insurance policies on them, and filed claims worth more than $2.2 million after the transients mysteriously died in hit-and-run pedestrian accidents in Los Angeles. One of the men was hit by a car and killed in an alley off La Brea and Melrose Avenues in 1999, and the second victim was run down in a Westwood alley last June. Detectives said they connected the 2 cases several months ago during a chance meeting between 2 investigators in the LAPD's West Traffic Bureau squad room. A detective handling the death of Kenneth McDavid, 50, was talking about the peculiarity of the case when another detective interrupted him to say that he had worked on a similar sounding, unsolved, hit-and-run 6 years ago. Comparing notes, they realized that in both cases the bodies had been claimed by Olga Ruderschmidt, 73, of Hollywood, and Helen Golay, 75, of Santa Monica. Attorneys for Kenneth Lay suggested bank loan documents containing terms he allegedly violated actually were signed by an automatic signature device in the Enron Corporation's founder's office and not by him. Lay went on trial Thursday on 1 count of bank fraud and 3 counts of making false statements regarding personal banking issues. The trial, expected to wrap up as early as Tuesday, got underway the day after jurors began deliberating the nearly 4-month-long fraud and conspiracy case of Lay and former Enron chief executive Jeffrey Skilling. Lay is charged with 6 counts in that case, Skilling with 28. Prosecutors allege that beginning in 1999, Lay obtained $75 million in loans from 3 banks, Bank of America, Chase Bank of Texas, and Compass Bank, and then reneged on an agreement with the lenders that he wouldn't use the money to carry or buy stock. Under federal rules adopted after the 1929 stock market crash, only 50% of a loan can be used to buy margin stock, generally defined as a stock listed on a national securities exchange and most mutual funds. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yeah, it's not Bob. This is Bruce. That's right. Bob is off dealing with trying to create stability in his relationship with his computer. Not his wife. This is Bruce Birch. I'm covering for Bob for the rest of the show tonight. And you're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid. You can go to headonradionetwork.com if you're listening to the stream and you want to get on the chat room there and chat with some of the finest minds on that exist anywhere on the internet. They're there. You can call if you'd like to get in on the radio program. You can call me at 1-877-443-2366 or send me an email, bruce@brucebirch.com. I checked during the break there and didn't see anything, so I guess folks are either out and about or they're doing whatever they're doing tonight. Okay, wanted to go back to the phones, and our good friend Jim is back with us. Said he had a quick comment he wanted to make. Jim, are you back on with us tonight?
I'm back on. Listen, even though God himself only had 10, your 14 points were well illustrated. And that's one of the most intelligent things I've heard in a long time on this station, really, the way they were presented. And it's very accurate and very telling.
Well, that's why I thought it was good to sort of bring that in. Because
I like the structure, and I like the, you know, just basically straight reportage of that. No name calling, no yelling, just illustrations of the way you did it, and it was wonderful. And as far as what Bush's reply to David Gregory is concerned, you know what that made about as much sense as?
What's that?
Roses are red, violets are blue. I like peanut butter. Let's fornicate.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
yeah, now, I think someone must have given that idiot spirochete of a mind a massive injection of Christopher.
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, did you see the video?
No, I couldn't handle it.
Okay. No, well, his face was as red as a beet.
I don't have enough epicac to conquer the gag reflex. You know, I'm sorry, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But your 14 points were well absorbed by this listener. Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for calling back in, Jim.
Out here.
Okay. All right. Well, the 14 points of fascism. Yes, we were talking about that a little bit earlier. In the last segment. If you missed that, you can go to oldamericancentury.org. And it should be, let's see, I'm going to go to their homepage and see if there's a link on their homepage to that particular post. And I'm sure there is somewhere on there. If not, then just Google the 14, just Google 14 points of fascism, and that, you know, you'll find them directly. You know, As I was discussing this a while back, one of the things that I saw in the chat room was someone actually, and John Fox is now saying that both fascism lists, that there's actually more than one, okay, well, maybe we'll go take a look at the other one, too, before the end of the program, that are both fascism lists are on the front page of 12thharmonic.net. That's 12th, 12th, harmonic.net. And the dot's just a dot. You don't actually spell it out. Anyway, one of the people in the chat room actually mentioned that he believed that we had already slipped past fascism and were heading directly toward totalitarianism. So I think that's absolutely possible as well. It just kind of blows me away. I mean, the more we think about this and the more that we are dealing with this president, and he just the disdain that he has for freedom, the disdain he has for true freedom and human rights, all the while claiming that freedom and human rights are, existent in this society. This amazes me. Okay, I'm looking at both lists now, and I don't see much of a difference between. Oh, okay, maybe. Well, here we go. Let's do this next list then. I'm going to confuse you all tonight, but I'm going to get the word fascism out there a bunch of times, and that's what this is all about. No, it's not. Okay, now I wanted to bring that out to the fore because I really do believe that we have to, it's our job now. We have a couple of things that we need to do. The first one is to work our butts off to try to get an opposition party into power, in this country. Now, here we have in the United States, we have a two-party system, okay? And I'm not going to debate the necessity of runoff elections or third parties or any of that stuff tonight, because that's a whole different topic, and I don't want to go there tonight unless somebody calls me and wants to talk about it, then we'll go there. But we have a two-party system in this country, and only in rare circumstances has a third party ever had much clout in this country. Namely, I can think of a couple of times that an independent candidate really did create problems, if you will, for the other two, the other two parties. So we are in essence faced with having to deal with, if you will, the lesser of two evils, and is Hillary Clinton better than George Bush? I don't know. Her support of the war, I disagree with. Her support of corporate rights, I disagree with. Her standing up for big business and not so much for the little guy, I totally disagree with. Is if she is nominated as to run for president of the United States, would I vote for her? That's a darn good question, and I don't know that I can answer that tonight. Because I'm thinking, would she be better than John McCain? would she be better than Bill Frist? Oh my God. Oh my goodness. Probably so. Would she be better than, say, Russ Feingold? Absolutely not. Okay. And therein lies our situation in this country, is that we have allowed those of us who are progressives or on the left who believe in the ideals of helping your fellow man and trying to create community and trying to do the right thing, not a fair day's wage for a fair day's work. No, but a decent wage for a fair day's work. Those of us who believe in those tenets and in those ideals, need to back up our beliefs with our actions. And the way that we do that is we go out and we talk to our neighbors. And we try to change the conversation. And we show them these 14 points of fascism and say, you know what, I want to show you something. I want to print it out on a sheet of paper and take it over there and say, take a cigar over there next door to your buddy's house or whatever, or a beer or whatever it is that you do. Take a cigar over there and sit down with them, or, whatever it is. And sit down with them and have a conversation about this and say, listen, if we replaced this word fascism with something else, would you buy it? Would you sit down and would you actually read this in a realistic way if you didn't see Hitler's name on it or if you didn't see fascism on it? Would you actually sit down and have a realistic conversation about these 14 points of whatever they are, of corporatism perhaps, or totalitarianism. Would you be willing to sit down and have a conversation with it? That's where the rubber meets the road, ladies and gentlemen. In my opinion, that's where the rubber meets the road. Organizing begins with the people who are around you, not in Washington, D.C. It begins in the towns and the cities where you're sitting right now. And the only way that we're going to be able to change the conversation in this country is if we, in turn, each one of us goes out and talks to 10 other people and challenge them to talk to 10 other people. And those 100 people or whatever challenge each other to talk to another 10 people. And that circle of influence grows. Right now, this president is at the lowest point of his career and laughs about it. Does that tell you anything about how much importance he places on what you think? It tells me everything I need to know. It tells me that this president doesn't give a damn what I think and is going to move forward with his agenda regardless of what the American people have to say about it. What's the action? You know, what's the option? Well, we're going to talk about that after we take our break. You are listening to Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid, and Bob is not in, and Bruce is in. Bruce Birch, I do the news usually here during the week. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, and then Head On. Or you can send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com. We'll be right back. My team reporters travel Trump, Jen, and Crop. Look at that, no plane, fine, then. Overflow, population common, do what it'll do. Save yourself, save yourself. World says it's your needs, listen to your heartbeat. Dummy with the rapture and the reverend, the right, right. You vitriolic, patriotic, slam, fight, bright. I feel it, pretty sight. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Close your eyes for a moment. Now imagine you're away from it all. Beside a crystal clear mountain stream, the cool grass crunches underfoot. Take a deep breath and drink in the sound of water cascading over the stones as birds call out from above. A real paradise like this isn't easy to come by, but it does still exist. And with your help, places like this one can last forever. You see, the Nature Conservancy works locally with communities, businesses, and people like you to preserve the most precious natural places around the world. They protect the animals that live there, the plants that grow there, and even the water. That way, this beautiful place will be beautiful forever. And we'll make sure that closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. I'm Paul Newman. Help the Nature Conservancy save the last great places.
Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org. That's nature.org.
back on Head On with Bob Kincaid. This is Bruce Birch. I'm sitting in for Bob tonight as he gets his laptop figured out. Bob is down in Alabama and is on doing a remote thing, and you know it's kind of cool because the only thing is that you know sometimes and as you and I have both probably received equipment that was kind of faulty. Well, you know he got the wrong end of the stick on this one, so he's off dealing with it. Before we head over to the phone lines, I wanted to also remind you of the Head On Radio Network website and chat room. If you haven't been there and chatted in the chat room, man, they are just going off to town tonight. They're having a great time in there in the chat room. Salut to chat room, and that's a blessing. Salute to you. Also, if you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, Head On, and then you can also email me if you're so inclined, or reclined, as it is about 9:20 at night. If you're so reclined, you can email me, bruce@brucebirch.com. Oh, me with the puns. Okay. Well, you only got 40 more minutes of me, and then you can go do what you want to do. All right, we're going to go over to the phones now. We have David on line one. David, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing all right, Bruce. I just wanted to talk about, like, a few different issues on my mind. I don't want
okay.
to tar baby or anything.
Okay.
I just had to say that.
I just had to say it, huh?
Yeah, I just had to say it because, I mean, I don't know if you read the Tony Snow's rebuttal, but he doesn't want to admit it. He keeps saying, well, I'm sorry that Americans aren't up on American lore. It's an Uncle Remus tale. I mean, he doesn't even realize that the story was racist in itself. How can you
exactly.
be that dumb?
Exactly.
And you know what? You would not be able, if Tony Snow still had his radio show, which I don't think he does now, he can't have his radio show because he's a correspondent or whatnot. But if he still had his radio show and you asked him that, he would immediately put the mute button on and wouldn't want to hear it.
That's right. Well, that's the unfortunate thing about being the press secretary of the President of the United States is that you can't mute Helen Thomas.
You can't mute Helen Thomas. Did you catch that soundbite on, I don't know if you guys played it because I just tuned in now. Did you catch that soundbite on O'Reilly and Rumsfeld?
No, I didn't. Tell us about it.
Oh, you got to listen to it. It's O'Reilly tells him, he goes, what do you know? He's like sounding really authoritative. What do you know about this firefight? Is there any truth to it? And Rumsfeld is like so caught in the headlights. He doesn't expect this from O'Reilly. And he's like, I'll look into it. And he's like, because I'm telling you, he goes, we're about to run with the story. He goes, so are you sure? And he's like, I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just the funniest soundbite. I mean, because it just shows you how clueless.
Well, exactly. I think, and also, you know, the Fox News folks is kind of interesting because I have watched a couple of times over the last couple of weeks where they have actually come out being pretty hostile toward the folks in the administration. Matter of fact, was it O'Reilly who did Cheney recently? Also,
I'm not sure, but
well, somebody one of those hacks over there did an interview with Dick Cheney. And did the same thing, kind of caught him in the headlights as well. So, you know, maybe there is some hope for Fox. God, don't hold me to that. And
I don't think there is. The only hope for Fox, and I say this time and time again, is Alan Combs. And not his show with Hannity and Combs, his radio show. Because his radio show, he has on a potpourri of guests, and he lets them speak whatever he wants. And he's been doing it since, like, 1978.
He has been in radio a long time.
Yeah, and he's really an important person to have, but I don't think he realizes that he's Roger Ailes' pawn. Or I don't think he wants to believe that. One time he got on a tirade about Robert Greenwald and how he said he mischaracterized him on the documentary, so he didn't want to have him on the show, and I thought that was kind of odd. Like, it's just his opinion.
The token liberal on Fox, right?
That's what he said. It was just... I kept thinking to myself, it's just his opinion, Alan. I mean, you can't be this touchy. But then, you know, I realized that when you live in uptown New York and you have display that kind of attitude, after 20 or 25 years of living there, it's going to rub on you, and you won't know it. you're so insular to that world. That's how I explain how a lot of these attitudes to people. I think a lot of these people are oblivious the way they act until they're actually called on it. But even then, it's hard to break a behavior pattern.
Sure.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was, I wanted to ask you about Hillary Clinton because I'm baffled by her too. I'm baffled by the fact that Rupert Murdoch is actually showing up at fundraisers for her. I don't know where she stands on some things. I've read some articles in American Conservative, which I tend to think is good for information and sources, but I'm not so sure on the opinion wise. I wanted to ask you, where does Hillary Clinton stand on veteran issues?
On veteran issues?
Yes.
It's my understanding that Hillary stands very firm on veteran issues. And the last thing that I remember reading anything about that was that she was very much in favor of replacing a bunch of money into the VA that had been taken out. So
Why do you think that they keep cutting up? Cutting more and more benefits every month or every so often. It just seems like it's the most hypocritical thing to do.
Well, what happens, I think, and you know, Bob was talking about this earlier, and it is really just disparaging. But based on how I've watched Congress operate,
right,
especially when it comes down to budget reconciliations and spending bills, is that, you know, there is a, they have the meetings and they cut all these things out and they release this out that, you know, to make it look like to their constituents that they're being tough and they're not going to spend this money and we're going to be, you know, fiscally responsible and blah, 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 blah. And then what happens is the veterans groups such as the DAV or any number of veterans service groups will then, you know, petition Congress and they'll come in and they'll testify. And the largest majority of that money will probably get put back, especially once it goes to a Senate for ratification, because the Senate is sort of like the moderating voice of the Congress. I mean, you know, the representatives, the House of Representatives, tends to pass draconian legislation, and oh, we're going to do all these bad things. You know,
right.
if the country were run the way the House of Representatives would like to see it run, we would be in the middle of a fascist totalitarian regime. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
So do you think it's really a case of people really don't know what to do with the veteran infrastructure in the United States, and that they're just kind of somewhat lazy in approaching and building something that really it works and really brings out the funds and really makes a positive difference and an impact directly?
Well, I think the question that you're asking me is, I mean, I don't believe that the Republican Party ever wants to see anything good to happen with government money. Okay? And the reason why I say that is I have watched how they will enact these laws and then not fund them, or they will send billions of dollars to Iraq to pay contractors with bricks of cash, or for instance, what happened in New Orleans. Now, are they too lazy? I don't know. I think that there is a certain amount of intentional effort in the Republican government right now to try to create a government that is so unwieldy that nobody wants to access it.
Well, you know, I keep thinking that they're so anti-government. It just seems to me that they're the biggest corporate welfare kings and queens on the block.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and government welfare.
David, I totally agree with you. I think that the government or that the corporations such as Halliburton is the welfare queen of the 2000s, if you will.
Right.
Okay. And I think it's up to the Democratic Party to be the opposition party. Hint, hint. And actually present a campaign that presents this to the American people. Now, I think the American people already see it. but they need to hear somebody else say it, too.
I think Democrats need to frame the issue Absolutely. Of the corporate welfare. I don't really hear it. I just hear them, you know, I hear Feingold and whatnot speak intelligently and whatnot, but a lot of people, I just don't, I hear these stump speeches and these bumper stickers, and it's like, I mean, for example, with Dianne Feinstein, I think she's so caught in the D.C. bubble, she has no idea what's going on in reality. Not a clue.
I totally agree with you. David, can you hang on? We've got to take a quick break, but we can pick this up after that break if you're willing.
Yeah, I'm willing.
All right, well, hang on the line there, and we'll be right back. This is Bruce Birch, and I'm covering for Bob Kincaid on Head On with Bob Kincaid. Bob's out tonight, but I'm here sitting in for him. If you want to get in on the radio program, you got about a half an hour to do so. That's 1-877-443-2366 or bruce@brucebirch.com. We'll be right back.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell. The immigration debate continues to blaze, with a new fire igniting between President George W. Bush and Wisconsin Representative F. James Sensenbrenner. The Republican congressman has come under fire from immigration rights groups for drafting a bill that would classify illegal immigrants as felons. Sensenbrenner criticized the president on Wednesday, saying it was the White House that requested the two controversial felony provisions in the immigration bill. But Sensenbrenner says it now appears that the president is turning his back on the bill. Sensenbrenner said that Bush's call for allowing many of the 12 million illegal immigrants in this country eventually become citizens is really just amnesty for individuals who have broken the law.
Mesaba Airlines has failed in an effort to destroy its union contracts in court. Bankruptcy Judge Gregory Kishel Thursday rejected the move by the airline. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says its members will continue to fight for a fair and equitable contract. Had those union contracts been thrown out, the airline would have faced a strike by some or all of its unions.
Steelworkers are prepared to strike if talks with Alcoa break down. The workers' contracts expired on May 31st, and negotiations are set to begin on Thursday. Union members at 15 plants authorized leadership to call a walkout against the world's biggest aluminum producer if contract negotiations break down. While both sides have expressed that they have an open dialogue and see little chafing on most contract issues, health care and retiree benefits could cause some friction at the bargaining table.
Madison Gas and Electric, a public power utility in Wisconsin's capital, is out to destroy its workers' defined benefit pensions. Dave Poklin-Kusky of IBEW Local 2304 says this is a highly profitable power company with no financial justification for trying to take workers' pensions.
I think everybody needs to recognize that if workers working for a state-regulated monopoly with a well-funded defined benefit pension plan are not going to be able to retain a pension plan, then everybody's pension is at stake.
Poklin-Kusky says that defined benefit pensions are much better for workers than 401ks, and his union, IBEW Local 2304, will never agree to end defined benefit pensions. Here's today's economic report. There were 367,000 new claims for unemployment benefits the week ending May 13th, the highest number since October of 2005. While more workers are needing to file for jobless benefits, inflation is also getting higher, putting even more pressure on family income. Things are harder for working families despite economic growth in the first quarter at an annual pace of 4.8%. Meanwhile, the number of new jobs added in April was 138,000, the lowest jobs growth since October. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
All right, you're back on Head On with Bob Kincaid, and this is Bruce Birch sitting in for Bob. And I normally do a radio program on this station late night on the weekends, on Saturday night with my good friend John Fox. We do Fourth Estate Radio. You can go to fourthestateradio.com and check that out if you're interested in that radio program. Or you can hook onto this stream at 10 o'clock tomorrow night and you'll hear it. I also do a little radio program called All Things Reconsidered, which is at allthingsreconsidered.org, and you can check that out, or you can dial in again Sunday night at 10 o'clock to catch that radio program. When we went over to the break, we left our good friend David on the line, and David, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, sorry to have had to put you on hold, but we needed to take that quick break and come back. So
that's not a problem. I think we were talking about the issue of framing, and we were getting into Feingold and the Democrats and the people that are so outside the reality bubble. It's not even funny.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, how about Feingold?
I think Feingold is shaping up to be one of the best senators I've seen in a while. The way he's standing, I don't know his. I don't know him personally or anything like that. It's just what I see so far. And I think we just have to take that day by day because anything can change. A consultant can get to him. I think that's what happened to Hillary in essence. Too many consultants got to her head, and they just wired her like some kind of feminine Frankenstein.
There's a lot of people who believe that she was the power behind Bill.
I don't doubt it. I mean, I just find it funny that she has these kind of like manipulative ways regarding war and combat. Like she doesn't say that she's for invading Iran, but she doesn't say she's against it either.
Right, right.
And it's kind of scary. Well, it's like somebody should stand up and go, but don't you understand what you're saying? Don't you understand how many civilians are going to be killed? Doesn't that even register with you?
Well, I think, you know, and I do appreciate. I mean, I totally, you know, I am one of those people that's very anti-war, so I can
right.
I'm right there with you. I having said that, I also appreciate the situation that any of those folks who are in Washington who have to deal with this on a daily basis in the halls of power, you know, that the situation they're standing in is that number one, the politician is always looking to get reelected, right?
Right.
How would it look? Okay, yeah. What was the major issue that they painted John Kerry with?
The
$87 billion
right.
supplemental.
Exactly. Right.
So, you know, now the smear machine on the right, worked overtime to try to create that situation. And they did it, and it was probably one of the best ad campaigns besides the Swift vote morons, you know, was probably the best ad campaign that was out there. Now, you know, I didn't agree with it, and it was absolutely wrong. Right. However, where are the folks on our side of the fence who are also looking for those same opportunities?
Well, I think a lot of the sound machine is so big on the right wing that they're so timid to do that because they could come out and just totally strong-arm everybody on the Democratic side and just basically paint us as the biggest whiners on the planet. It's like walking a tightrope. I don't know how to say it any other way. I think that's really what it comes down to with our media infrastructure. We just need to keep building. That's all I can really say on that.
I totally agree, and I think that's part of what we're doing with this new network is we're trying to create a new conversation, and that's what I was saying earlier, about a half an hour ago, about the reality of taking something like the 14 points of fascism and a cigar or whatever it is that you share with your neighbor,
right?
And go sit down with them and have a conversation, and then convince that person if they see things if their eyes open and they realize what you're talking about. To say, hey, listen, you know, maybe, you know, let's have a little afternoon party or a grill. You know, it's summertime. Let's grill out some if you're a meat eater, grill out some steaks and have some folks over and let's talk about some of these issues.
I understand. I understand that, and I just wanted to say that about the since you're speaking on smears and whatnot, I think this is relevant to bring up. But to me, it seems like Jack Murtha really needs to have a sit down with his consultants and see. When you say out to the press that you have Marines killing innocent civilians. It's such an easy spin. Anyone can do that in their sleep. You understand what I mean? He needs to frame it better. That's the world we live in now. Jack Murtha should not say on national TV that Marines are killing innocent people, because we're just going to get that baby killer against the troops, wants the troops to fail. There just needs to be a better frame. We just need better frame consultants, I guess, or analysts or whatever.
Well, you know, again, what about the union frame? You know, democracy in the workplace. How about that?
Right.
Well, that's what it is, right?
Right.
I mean, it's a bargaining. It's a sitting down at the table and let's work this out, so that everybody, you know, so that we can have a decent living. Well, it's the same thing in the halls of power. What happens is that what has happened thus far, you know, the Democrats don't have any real power because, for whatever reason, you know, if we could talk about voting machines, we could talk about smear campaigns or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but for whatever reason, they're not in the majority right now. Okay? So, but they're not going all out either to try to stymie legislation either. So it's like, you know, they're walking a tightrope up there. They don't want to seem to be oppositional, but they don't want to seem to be, you know, so that they're not patriotic or whatever, but they also need to be somewhat oppositional. So it's kind of like, you know, well, where can they do that?
I agree completely. I was just saying about how everybody keeps walking into the same trap every single time by saying killing civilians. They just need to come up with something better than just that, because it's just so easy to spin. They just need something that's harder to spin. It really takes time, and they have to crunch the phrases and whatnot, and it's going to take them a while to be able to jump over that hurdle, so to speak. And I think Murtha has a good chance of doing that. I just don't think that when he comes out and says killing babies and whatever he says on his stump speech, I just think, I know his heart's in the right place and whatnot, but if I was the Republican consultant, I'd just be rubbing my hands together. Oh boy, oh boy, look what Mr. Murtha said.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and actually, the there are people who I've talked to who say, you know, who will say out loud. I mean, these are conservatives who will say, well, the Democrats, all they have to do is stay quiet for the next 2 years,
right?
And the Republicans will ruin themselves enough that we'll probably have a Democratic majority in the House and the Senate and possibly the presidency for the next 20.
We were in 1984 and 2001, and now we're like in 1989.
I know.
but the good thing is the 80s are over. The bad thing is the 90s are just starting.
Oh.
So you got the whole neon clothes and rubber sunglasses trend, so you know. And jam pants.
Oh, joy.
I know.
What kind of pants? Jam pants?
Jam pants. Remember, they were like baggy pants and whatnot. And you.
Oh, yeah, the parachute things. Yeah. Yeah.
They weren't quite
good old MC Hammer.
They weren't quite as bad as the Hammer things. They were kind of like a lot of fusion artists and a lot of hippie folk, and they wore them in the 90s too.
Okay.
Jam pants is all.
Well, now you know that's my era too, by the way. So okay. Yeah, I remember some of that, but I wasn't completely underground.
Yeah,
I did like peek around a little bit.
Right.
But and I'm not going to talk about what I was spending my time doing during those years. Maybe some other time we'll talk about that, Dave.
All right, that sounds good.
All right, man.
All right, have a good night.
Okay, thanks for calling, David, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Okay, bye.
Okay. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid, and Bob's not in tonight. Bob is out taking care of a laptop. It's sick. It's running a temperature. And so we had to take it to the doctor. And hopefully soon we'll hear a report on how it's doing. Maybe we won't, but surely it'll be better by Monday. And Bob will be back up to his old tricks here at Head On Radio. You're listening to the Head On Radio, Head On with Bob Kincaid. This is Bruce Birch. I'm sitting in for Bob tonight. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can do that, if you're so inclined, or reclined, as the case may be, by dialing 1-877-443-2366. You got about 15 minutes left to get into the program. You can also send me an email if you're so inclined, by sending it to bruce@brucebirch.com. And for the moment, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. You know in the end I'll always be there. And when you're in doubt, and when you're in danger, take a look all around, and I'll be there.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war. Bottom line. Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org. Bob Kincaid. This is Bruce Birch, and I'm sitting in for Bob tonight, and we're rapidly descending down into our city of our point of destination, and that would be the 10 o'clock hour, about 12 minutes until the 10 o'clock hour here tonight, or 12 minutes before the hour, I should say. And it's been a really wonderful evening to sit in tonight and do Bob's show. Along with all of you folks who have called in and been a part of this radio program this evening, I was just looking for a final story. I was looking, you know, actually what I was looking for, I was looking for the dump story that the White House likes to do. They love to do a dump story every Friday night, you know, because Saturday is the least, is the day that the newspaper is least read around the United States. So if they do, if they push out a story Friday night that is, you know, supposedly not that bad, you know, it may get lost before Sunday and Monday roll back around. And I'm not really finding one, although I did find a really interesting picture of George Bush, the chimp in chief. Oh, my goodness. It's the top story on Yahoo, if you go check it out. Bush wants newcomers to know English, and the picture that they have of him is just, oh, my gosh. You know, it's almost like somebody has their hand rammed up his and they're controlling his mouth, and he looks like he's got the chimp thing going on. You really got to go check that out. It is kind of funny. Anyway, you know, I was talking earlier on earlier this hour about the importance of creating a conversation with those around you, and you know, I think part of what happened with this administration is they came into power. And, you know, with what happened on 9/11, people didn't want to speak out against this administration and seemed to be, you know, unpatriotic. And, well, I think the American people are beginning to get over that whole patriotism nonsense that happened around 9/11 and are finally beginning to see that this administration has taken that golden egg and turned it into a pile of crap. As opposed to using it as a way of national unity, they used it to create a police state, and they operated directly from the fear-based notion. Now, we have choices, ladies and gentlemen. You and I have choices every day that we get up and we go out and go through our day. And we have opportunities all throughout the day to strike up conversations and to let our feelings and our ideas, you know, about how this nation can be run. We have all kinds of opportunities to let that be known to our friends and to our family. What I would like to posit to you, what I would like to put forth, is that it is our responsibility to do that. And that if we don't take that opportunity, if we don't take that opportunity when it arises, then we are basically saying that, you know, you know, that we're not interested in trying to help bring this country around. And I know, if you're listening to this radio program, I absolutely know that you want the best for this nation. You know, I absolutely know that you don't want to see a thug like George Bush continue to run this nation for the next 2 years. The Democrats have said, or John Conyers has come out and said, that he doesn't necessarily want to impeach Bush immediately. Well, I think we need to. I absolutely think we need to. But the other part of that too is just that I want to, you know, I really want to impress upon anyone who's listening tonight and those who listen to me on the weekend how important activism is and how important it is to have your say and how important it is to raise your voice. Because in the raising of your voice, in the standing up I think it was his name, Harry Campbell, or the guy who approached or who let Bush have it in Charlotte, North Carolina a few weeks ago, a month or so ago. In doing that, what you've done is you raise the level of courage around you. By showing courage, we raise the level of courage around us. And in so doing, what we do is we create an atmosphere where other people feel open, where other people want, you know, to be a part of that conversation, and they want to come out and say what they really think. And it's oh my gosh, it's overdue. We're overdue for that kind of situation in this country and for that kind of attitude, for people to say what they want to say to the president, even if need be. But especially to those around us. No more fear. And let me change that. Courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is having fear and moving forward and doing what needs to be done anyway, in spite of the fear. So having courage to me means standing up for your rights. It means standing up to this presidency. It means standing up to this this corrupt Republican Congress that would like nothing more than to empty the Treasury and send every one of them out onto the ocean in their houseboats and million-dollar Hawaiian getaways, etc. It means standing up to the judiciary that has run completely amok. I mean, this guy Alito and his mentor Scalia. You know, we all know, absolutely, we all know, because we've been watching them for the last 6 years. We all know what they're capable of. Now the question is what are you capable of? And if you're capable of what I think you're capable of, the conversation will change pretty quickly. However, if you decide that you don't want to be a part of that conversation, then do something, though. At least do something. Post a blog. Email your friends. You know, the bottom line is that we need to take this country back. I will stop short of saying by any means necessary. I will stop short of saying that. But we need to take this country back because our future is hanging in the balance. Our future, our children's future. I have three kids. I look at them and I think, what if they grew up in a place where they had to join the Hitler Youth? Because if they didn't, you know, then the parents would be subjected to intrusive... Wait a minute. Aren't we already being surveilled? Okay. We're getting up toward the top there. It's about 5 minutes till the end of the show. But I wanted to also make it very clear, too, that I'm very happy that to announce that one of our chat room folks just had a newborn son. 8 pounds, 1 ounce. Joel S., congratulations to you. I will now pass out cigars, virtual cigars in the chat room for you. So very congratulations to you. And you know what? For that newborn baby, ladies and gentlemen, for that little newborn baby that just came into the world, we owe that child a different country to live in. We owe that child a different way to be able to create safety and security for that kid. And I don't mean just military security. I mean drug security. I mean security into his old age. I mean security from getting laid off. That's the kind of security I'm talking about, the kind that happens when you're living. I'd like to thank Bob Kincaid for allowing me the opportunity to sit in on the radio program this evening and run the show in his absence. I certainly hope I left it better than I found it. I don't know if I did or not. I'd also like to thank Agnes Kincaid, Bob's lovely wife, for producing the show tonight and for being such a wonderful and able producer there in West Virginia, in the wild, wonderful mountains of West Virginia. I'd also like to thank Brian Reznor for announcing the radio program and for John Fox for being the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Man, you do a wonderful job and good on you. I'd also like to thank Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for archiving this radio program and for archiving many other hours of liberal radio programming and for providing the streams for the Head On Radio Network as well. If you're listening to this show, you're on the White Rose Society stream. You know, if you feel so inclined, go over there and give him a look. I'd also like to thank Shelby Lepre for doing the wonderful work that she does over at